You're listening to WHFR Dearborn from the campus of Henry Ford College and featuring local and independent artists. Good morning. It is definitely cool out there, but we're here for you with another installment of Radio Vault. And let's quickly go over the menu, and then we're going to just let it rock all the way through. We're going to start it out in just a moment with Fibber McGee and Molly, one of the shows that was with, well, most of the shows were with Molly, from 1937. They're running a pet shop. And then we've got a couple of Jack Benny shows on tap. Also, somewhat early shows from 1943, we'll be listening to the one from the Quantico Marine Base, as well as the one where George Jessel fills in for Jack because Jack is late. We have got a show featuring someone who was a major part of the Jack Benny cast, and we speak of Mel Blanc. He had his own show, and we'll be listening to an example of that from 1947. The show didn't last very long, maybe only a season or so, but we will hear one of those. We're going to wrap it up today with an episode of the Lux Radio Theater from 1939, way back. 80-some years ago, they did Goodbye, Mr. Chips. So that is the basic menu for today's Radio Vault. We've got some ratings standards, I guess you could say. Somewhat of an obscure show in the Mel Blanc show. And the classic Lux Radio Theater. So if you're ready, I'm ready to turn back the hands of time to a time before, maybe before our parents were around. This is Radio Vault on the station Making Waves. Stay warm and check out the Johnson Wax program from February 1st of 1937.
The Johnson Wax Program, presenting Marion and Jim Jordan as Fibber McGee and Molly. Ted Weems and his orchestra open the show with Gee, But You're Swell.
And now, we're ready to hear from...
Pardon me, Harlow.
You dropped something. It's a snapshot. Oh, thanks, Elmo. That's a picture taken in my sister's kitchen. Said she wanted me to see how fine the floor looked after she used Johnson's glow coat. And now we give you those two long shots of the human race, Fibber McGee and Molly.
Got a toothpick, Molly?
No, why?
I got a seed in my teeth from that opening raspberry.
Don't be so sensitive, McGee. You're too thin-skinned.
Well, what's the matter with being thin-skinned? After all, an apple keeps longer than a watermelon.
Sure, but it's the thick-skinned animals that live longest. Now you take the rhinoceros or the elephant.
How about a harpopotamus? Wonder if he heard me.
No, I didn't.
Just my luck.
Listen, McGee, speaking of hippopotamuses, are you going back to that trainer again for some more physical culture?
Well, I don't know, Molly. After all, I got no ambition to go around with my muscles bulging like a dozen pigeons up my sleeve.
Oh, it isn't that, McGee, but you should take more exercise to build up your resistance.
Why, that's silly. I can't think of anything I want to resist.
Just the same, I think you should. You know, you're awful broad-shouldered in the hip.
Kind of wide across the pistol pocket, huh? But I think I can accomplish the same thing with diet.
You know, I tried that, too.
Yeah?
Once I went on a diet of whole wheat toast and tea and salad.
Well, how'd it work?
Not bad. Only I didn't have much appetite for my regular meals.
Well, I think people are inclined to get too serious about their health. They ought to laugh and play more.
That's a lovely idea, but it'll never get you anywhere.
Oh, no?
No.
Well, where would Jimmy Durante have been today if he'd have kept his nose to the grindstone?
Ah, you've got a fine philosophy of life. You'll never be a success.
Oh, I'm doing all right. I hit the jackpot twice last week over Joe's cigar store. You can't do that unless you live right.
Nevertheless, McGee, you ought to have a figure more like Ted Weems. Take a look at him. Slim and handsome.
Oh, Ted's too slim, Molly. You know what happened to him yesterday?
Why?
Well, the boys got through playing, and Ted was standing there all dressed up in that new black overcoat of his, and Parker Gibbs carried him clear home, thinking he was a clarinet.
You know, I'm going to ask Ted how he keeps in condition. Oh, Ted.
Well, what's the matter, Molly?
Oh, nothing, Ted.
Listen, Ted. How on earth do you keep so slim and all?
Setting up exercises.
Oh. Yeah, he sets up all night worrying about his figure.
What kind of setting up exercises, Ted?
Well, you see this baton?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
This baton only weighs an ounce.
Oh.
For a heavy workout, I use a 3-ounce baton.
Oh.
Keeps me in fine shape.
Yeah. You sounded a little muscle-bound on that last number. You didn't write the athlete's anthem, did you, Ted?
Athlete's anthem?
Yeah, Swing Mr. Charlie Horse.
No, but I did the lyrics for the Biceps Ballet.
Biceps
what was
Ballet?
That?
You know, da, 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 muscle tough. But why don't you talk to Perry Como? All the girls are crazy about him. I'll send him over.
Now, you see, McGee, Ted's a success because he keeps in shape.
Yeah, well, Paul Whiteman ain't on relief either.
Perry.
Hi, Perry.
Ted said you wanted to speak to me.
Yes, you know, I've been trying to tell McGee he ought to keep up with his physical training. Oh, he isn't fat or anything, but just soft. Well, I can't even get him to do a thing around the house, Perry.
Go on, I shined up the kitchen floor this morning, didn't I?
Yes, but we used Johnson's glow coat, so you knew it was the easiest job in the house. How am I doing, Mr. Wilcox?
You took the words right out of my script.
But seriously, Perry, how do you keep fit?
I've got a dog.
A dog?
Oh, well, that's a big help. You got a dog. Well, what does that prove?
Well, I've got to take the dog for a walk, haven't I?
Oh. Yes.
I've had to walk with him, don't I?
Oh, you see, McGee, if you're pouchy, get a poochie.
I don't think you got anything there, Molly.
Well, thanks a lot, Perry. That's a grand idea. It gives you plenty of exercise, does it?
Does it? I've worn out 3 greyhounds already.
Oh.
If there's anything else I can tell you,
Shucks, a dog. Imagine Joe Louis training for a fight by parading a poodle around the park.
Say, listen, McGee. Hmm? What do you say we go downtown and get a dog?
Oh, now, Molly,
McGee, you've always said you wanted a dog.
Yes, but I don't see
it. Think of it. Just think of it. Who is it that waits patiently on the doorstep for the master to come home with a warm welcome in his big brown eyes?
Oh, but...
Who jumps up on you and depends on you to give him his supper?
Your Uncle Dennis. There's an Irish character.
Sometimes I wonder what's in store for me. Your love could open heaven's door to me. But you don't care a straw about me. That's life, I guess. My days and nights all start in halls with you. My sugared kisses taste like salt to you. But why should I find fault with you? That's life, I guess. The world was bright when you loved me. Sweet was the touch of your lips. The world went dark when you left me. And then there came a total eclipse. Nobody knows how cruel fate can be. How close together love and hate can be. Goodbye just seemed a slave for me. That is life, I guess. And hate can be. Goodbye, just clean the slate for me. That's life, I guess. Yes, that's life, I guess.
And here, looking in the window of the Wistful Vista Pet Shop on the corner of 14th and Oak Street, we find those two prospective puppy purchasers, Fibber and Molly.
Oh, ain't them cute puppies in that window, Molly? Bring a good old beagle, boy.
Sure are. Say, what kind of a dog do you think we ought to get, McGee?
Well, I don't know, Molly. You remember that little white pup in The Thin Man? I'd like one like that.
Why?
Well, I might find Myrna Loy on the other end of the leash.
Don't be silly, McGee. I think I'd like a peek.
At what?
A Pekingese. Think how nice one would look with me brown fur coat.
What? All right, but don't let him wear that red hat. Oh, them puppies are having a lot of fun, ain't they?
Yeah.
How about that one? What would you say he was? A wire hair with a short circuit?
Well, I think his mother must have been a Mexican careless.
Looks like a police dog had been crossed with a coach dog and they'd got a patrol wagon with a tail.
You mean a patrol with a tail wagon?
Yeah.
Well, come on, let's go in.
Okay.
Hello, Savani. Hello, Babushka.
Oh, hi. Hi, Vodka. Are you the proprietor here?
Sure, Savani. I'm being expert on all animal kinds, from little elephants up to big train fleas.
Hmm. From elephants to fleas, eh? Looks kind of like Frank Buck, don't he, Molly?
Oh, he's too big.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say about a buck and a quarter. Well, we're looking for a dog.
Yeah.
Good, Babushka. When you are looking at me, you are looking at a beautiful dog, which I have plenty of them in windows and back rooms.
You see, Bud...
My husband here needs exercise, so he thought if he got himself a...
Don't mention it, Babushka. I am taxing on quick. Are you living in houses or apartments?
A house, but I'm
selling you just what you need, Tavares. English sheep dog.
We haven't any sheep.
Well, maybe he wants to sell us some sheep, too. Stop us if you've herded them, Bud. Get up, Mom.
Ain't funny, McGee.
Okay, I'm not fussy. The fact is, Bud, we don't care what his nationality is if he can walk.
You will be liking this dog. It is Bedlington. You will no doubtless wanting two of him.
Oh, I see. Twin Bedlington.
You see, Bud, being an old pet shop owner myself, I understand the difference.
Excuse me, please. I must answer a telephone.
Oh, don't mention it, I'm sure.
Mm.
Now, what were you going to tell him, Mr. Ex-Pet Shop Prop?
I was just going to tell him about the time I had me a pet shop. I was done. Oh, you back already, Bud?
Duh.
I was just telling my wife here about when I used to have me my pet shop. Back in Peoria. Pet Shop McGee, I was known as in them days.
Oh, dear.
Pet Shop McGee, the perspicacious purchaser of pet pigs, playful ponies, peppy pups, and popular promoter of parrot production in Peoria.
That's so. I'm very glad about it.
You interrupted me, Bud.
Sure.
I was going to tell you about the time I had me some smart dogs displayed in the window of my shop. There was a Scotty, a wire hair, two Doberman pinchers, and a Dachshund. Well, sir, one day I had me a little auto accident and was detained at the police station. I kept worrying about my dogs, about who was going to feed them and all. But, shucks, I had all my worry for nothing.
Well, how's that, McGee?
Well, sir, when I got back, I found that them dogs picked the lock so the Dachshund could scoot through and get the biscuits.
Picked the lock?
Mm-hmm.
Those dogs?
Yeah, it was the Scotty's idea, you see. Two of the dogs twisted the wire hair till he fit the lock.
Well, how did they do that?
With a pair of Doberman pinchers.
Excuse me, Tavarich, but I'm seeing you are a pet shop man, and I'm asking favors for a minute. What's store for me while I'm going for a few minutes to see my cousin, Ivan Kuprachkin Yalko Purazatsky?
Oh,
what's
but
his
listen,
first name?
Gus.
Listen here, we can't.
No, I don't know, but
for doing this, Tavarich, I'm giving you special discount on dog buying. Dobra.
Dobra to you, too. Can you imagine
it? McGee, every time you open your mouth, you put your foot in it up to your hip.
Well, how did I know he was? Oh, here comes Ted Weems carrying a parrot. Hi, Ted. What can we do for you?
Do you fix parrots?
Well, what's the matter with him? Looks like a pretty good parrot to me, except for that bandage around his beak and his neck's all twisted to one side.
What happened to him, Ted?
I had a party at my house, and Parker Gibbs tried to open a bottle of ginger ale with him.
Well, take him home, and we'll send you a bill.
Okay.
Can you imagine that, McGee? Trying to use a poor parrot's beak to open a ginger ale bottle.
Well, what's funny about that? Shucks, they used the mayor to open the new public library.
That's funny. Cute girl, too.
I'll wait on her. Hi, sis. What can we do for you? Need some accessories? We got everything from hippo harness to guppy galoshes.
No, never mind. I'll wait, please.
Wait for what, sis?
Oh, I'll just wait, that's all.
Oh, well, you must want something.
Oh, maybe she wants to look around a little while. Anything I can show you, sis? Something in a four-legged friend?
Yes, give me a chair.
Okay. Here you are. Sit down, miss.
Thank you.
Now, when you want something, just speak up, dear.
Yeah.
All right.
Yeah.
I'll get it, McGee.
Okay.
Hello? Wistful Vista Pet Shop, Molly McGee speaking. Yes? Yes, I see. Just a minute, please.
What's the matter, Molly?
Lady wants to know what to feed her guppy.
Well, tell her just feed him lightly in the morning with a little milk and cornbread. Let him have an old shoe to chew on during the day. Then in the evening, some mush or slightly cooked hamburger. And take him out for a walk 4 times a day.
Guppy?
What?
Guppy?
Oh, I thought you said puppies. Tell her to swim over here with him someday and we'll work out a diet.
Hello? I think you've got the wrong number, madam.
Yeah.
Now, McGee, maybe the girl over there has made up her mind what she wants.
Well, I'll see. How about it, sis? You know what you want now?
Yes, I do.
Fine. Well, it'll be.
I'll just wait.
Oh. She'll wait, Molly.
Wait for what?
Well, search me, I suppose. Oh, look, Silly Watson.
Hi, Miss McGee. Y'all working here now?
Oh, just temporarily, Silly. Why?
Well, when you get through, could y'all come down to the jailhouse and see could you explain my brother to the jail man?
Your brother considerable?
Yes, sir.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's he in for, Silly?
sort of days, please, ma'am.
No. She means, what did he do?
Well, it ain't what did he do, Miss McGee. It's what he gonna do.
And what's that?
Thursday.
Yes, Phil. What was he arrested for?
Well, sir, considerable, he's a musician. Yeah. Only musician stuff is kind of scarce around here right now. So he get himself a job with a farmer.
Oh, yeah? Mm-hmm.
Yes, ma'am. The old farmer, he had to bring my brother a new hoe every day, mostly.
A new hoe?
Yes, sir. My brother, he hid him under the barn.
He what?
He hid him. The old farmer, he found out where my brother had hid him, and he had him pinned. He said, boy, what for you do this? And considerably, he tell him.
What did he tell him?
Well, he say he was holding old potatoes facing the hay feed, and every time he seen the folks making hay, he got to hide the hole. Goodbye.
Ted Williams and the boys playing Linger a While, embellished and decorated by Elmo Tanner's whistling. Well, the McGees are still in charge of the Wistful Vista Pet Shop, and they still don't know what their lady customer wants.
McGee.
Hmm?
Maybe she's made up her mind now. Ask her again.
Okay. How about it, sis? You know what you want yet?
Yes, I do.
Well, that's the stuff. What'll it be?
I'll wait.
Had read it. You'll wait for what?
Oh, never mind. I'll just wait.
Well, I know, but look here, you...
McGee.
Huh?
The customer's always right. Oh, how do you do, sir? What can we do for you?
I want a cat.
Oh, a cat, huh? Well, we only got one, bud, that little brown one over there.
What is it, a tan Persian?
No, a chocolate Maltese.
No, thanks. No, thanks. Too rich.
Nice going, McGee. Anything else you can do to ruin the business here?
What do you mean, ruin it? Say, I know more about the pet shop racket than anybody else. Why, mind the time down. Oh, Mrs. Wearybottom. Hi, Weary.
Oh, hello, folks. What are you doing working in here among all these goldfish and canaries and cats and stuff and dogs? I'll never forget my uncle when he made his will. He insisted on being put in a mausoleum built in the shape of a kennel. He said he'd been in the doghouse all his life. He didn't know why he should change now. What a horrible necktie you got on.
Oh, you don't like it, eh? Well, listen, Weary, how about buying some of these Japanese fantails? Oriental Sally Rand goldfish, we call them.
I've got a lot of goldfish in the house now. My neighbors say they keep them awake all night, splashing around. Why, when I got those goldfish, they didn't even look like goldfish, and my brother used to sing a song like, when your hair is turned to silver, only he called it, when your herring is turned to goldfish, I will carp no more today. He was an awful fool, my brother was. It's real slippery out, ain't it?
When your herring is turned to go... Shucks. What a song. Now listen, Harpo, what did you want?
I want some fish food.
Yeah, you want to eat it here or take it home?
My God, I know when I'm not wanted. Goodbye.
Molly, see if that girl over there has made up her mind what she wants.
Okay. Now then, dearie, are you ready to buy something?
No, thank you.
Well, are you going to sit there all day, sis?
Yes, if necessary.
If necessary to what? Can't you tell us what you want?
Yes.
Okay, what?
I want to wait.
Oh. Okay, but you'll have to leave when we close up.
Get the phone, McGee.
All right. Hello. Yes? What? A leash for a dog? No, we don't leash our dogs, sis. We sell them outright. Oh, is that so? Trying to get funny with me. Well, what can we do for you, bud?
How do you do, my little mongrel merchants?
Well, how do you do, I'm sure.
Allow me to introduce myself. Well. I'm Horatio K. Boomer of the Boomer Dog and Pony Shows. I'm looking for a small dog that can do tricks.
Oh.
Just lost my most valuable canine. Splendid animal, splendid. Could find anything anywhere, yes, yes.
What kind of tricks did he do?
Quite a retriever.
Retriever?
Used to retrieve pocketbooks from all over the circus ground.
Well.
If I can't get another one, I'll have to go into retriever sham. Yes, yes. Yes, he's a very fine dog. Wouldn't touch a wallet with less than $5 in it. Very intelligent animal. Worked for me for years. Never tore a customer's hip pocket.
That's a fine thing to teach a dog to do, Boomer. Make a pickpocket out of him.
Why, sure. We wouldn't sell you a dog for that purpose.
Your honest sentiments do you credit, my dear. Yes, yes.
What became of the dog, Boomer?
Well, I'll tell you. Pardon me if I wipe my eyes. It's a very touching story. We were playing Oskaloosa last week, and there was a flea circus next door. My dog eloped with their leading lady. Just a stage door, Fido. And if I don't find him, I'm going to be out of luck. Yes, yes. Well, if you won't sell me a dog, I'll have to look elsewhere. Good day to you and the best of...
Hey there. Put those goldfish down.
Oh, yes. Excuse me. Every time I see a couple of fins floating around, I always... good day to you. Good day and the best of health.
Thanks, bud.
To your livestock. Yeah.
You know what, McGee?
What?
I think he was crooked.
No.
Really, I do. You heard what he said about that.
Oh, hello there, little girl.
Hi, mister.
What can I do for you?
Hmm?
I says, what did you want?
I want to look at the birds and the goldfish and the canaries and things. Can I, mister? Can I, please?
Oh, okay, sis, but don't touch anything. You might get bit by a parrot or something.
Hmm?
I bet you'd cry if a parrot bit you.
You would, too, I bet you, if he bit you.
Well, I bet you. I mean... How do you like the goldfish?
Swell. Who painted them?
Nobody painted them. They come that way.
What way?
Gold.
Hmm?
I says goldfish are naturally gold.
Why?
Well, Dad Braddett, how do I know why?
Well, don't you work here?
Well, of course I work here, but that's...
Well, gee, then you ought to know why, I betcha.
Oh. Well, why is a parrot all them bright colors?
Why?
I'm asking you.
I guess we're both pretty dumb, aren't we? Come on, mister.
Pretty dumb, well, for the love of Mike. Can you imagine that kid coming in here and...
Oh, how do you do, sir? What can we do for you now? We have some lovely...
I'm looking for a girl who said she'd... Oh, there she is. Margie.
Albert.
Darling.
Sweetheart.
Heavenly days, McGee. Look at him.
Hey, you two lovebirds. Go on home if you want to do that, or find a park bench.
Oh, Albert.
Hey, quit it, I said.
Who's the Snooky who comes as old?
Oh, Albert.
Hey, what's the idea here? What do you think this is?
Well, the sign in the window says pet shop.
Thank you.
say, Molly, you know, I think I could make dough in a pet shop like that. You know, I got a kind of a way with animals.
Oh,
things.
Yes? But you haven't much of a way with customers.
What do you mean, Molly?
Well, when that fella came in with the St. Bernard dog and said it was eating him out of a house and home and wanted to trade it in for something smaller, what did you tell him?
Well, I just told him.
Why, you told him to trade it in for a moth because moths only eat holes.
Good night.
Good night, all.
This is Harlow Wilcox speaking for the makers of Johnson's Wax and inviting you all to be with us again next week at this same time.
This is the Red Network of the National Broadcasting Company. WMAQ Chicago. Tickets are available for the Fibber McGee rebroadcast. If you would like to attend one of these late performances, write the Johnson Program, care of WMAQ Chicago.
Saturday, January 18th at 7 p.m., the Henry Ford College Music Department will proudly present the second installment of their annual Henry Ford Big Band Concert Series, this time featuring Detroit-based jazz bassist Trevor Lamb. A member of multiple local projects, including the Eat It Up Trio, several regular jam sessions around town, and the Trevor Lamb Trio, Trevor Lamb joins the Henry Ford College Big Band for one night only, from the Adrey Auditorium inside the McKenzie Fine Arts Center on the campus of Henry Ford College, located at 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, Michigan, at 7 p.m. on Saturday, January 18th. Can't make it in person? WHFR will broadcast the concert live right here on these airwaves. That's Trevor Lamb and the Henry Ford Big Band, live from the Adrey Auditorium on the campus of Henry Ford College, or broadcast live at 89.3 FM in the Dearborn area and online at www.whfr.fm, Saturday, January 18th at 7 p.m.
Coming up next, WHFR.fm presents Classical 24.
The Grape Nuts Flakes program, coming to you from the United States Marine Base at Quantico, Virginia, and starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Dennis Day, Rochester, yours truly, Don Wilson, and the McFarlane Twins and their orchestra. Played by the orchestra. Now, ladies and gentlemen, from Quantico, Virginia, where we're broadcasting to the world's roughest, toughest fighting men, the United States Marines.
You said it.
We bring you the Waukegan Cream Puff, Jack Benny.
Hey. Thank you. Hey, what happened to that first number there? My goodness. I thought Phil Harris was back with us again. I mean, what the... Hello again. This is Jack Benny speaking. And Don, you can talk about my gray hair, and you can kid me about being, shall I say, conservative. But when you call me a cream puff, that's a going too far. Why, when I was a young fella in Waukegan, everybody used to call me the Mangler.
The Mangler? My goodness, why did they call you that?
I used to crush strawberries at a soda fountain. I was the best jerk they had. Soda, of course. And talk about being tough. Why, Don, would you believe it? When I was only 8 years old, I had a fight with a kid who was over 12.
And what happened?
I knocked her cold. She had it coming, though. She was always dipping my curls in the inkwell. But you're right about these Marines, Don. They're as rugged a bunch of boys as I've ever seen. I mean, they've got what it takes. Pardon me. Come in.
Mr. Benny!
Yes, on behalf of the Marine Station here, I want to welcome you to Quantico. Thank you very much. You're welcome. Pull in your gut.
Sir, gee, these guys are really in condition, aren't they, Don?
Yes, they certainly are. By the way, Jack, how's Mary's cold? Is she going to be on the program tonight?
No, she isn't, Don. She'll be back next Sunday, though. You know, we've been knocking around the country at a pretty fast clip, and a woman can't take it like we men. I feel fine myself.
You do, Mr. Benny?
Yeah. How do I look?
Well, I'll probably get slugged for this, but you look like something that cat dragged out.
That's in. Dragged in.
This cat dragged you out again.
Never mind. Hello, Dennis.
Hello.
Dennis, what do you mean I look bad? I mean, what's wrong with me?
Well, gee, you're awful pale and run down looking.
Well, sure I'm pale. I ruined my sun lamp trying to make waffles in it. What else is wrong?
Remember this morning on the train when you were shaving?
Yeah.
Well, you cut yourself and no blood came out.
Yikes! Well, that settles it. I gotta see a doctor. I'll mail out bids and get an estimate on a good checkup. First thing tomorrow.
Tell me, Jack, who's going to take Mary's place on the program tonight? After all, we do need a girl's voice.
Well...
Don't look at me. I'm just a tenor.
I'm not looking at you. I was about to say that Virginia Bruce is going to be with us tonight.
Virginia Bruce?
Yeah, she's down here on location for a picture, and she very graciously consented to come over.
You mean Virginia Bruce, the big movie actress?
Yes, sir.
You mean the beautiful blonde with the dreamy eyes that I'll fall madly in love with and ask her to marry me, and she'll say no, and I'll hang myself with that lousy necktie you gave me for Christmas?
Oh, boy, what an imagination that kid's got.
It comes in handy when you haven't got a girl, believe me.
All right. Anyway, Miss Bruce will be here in a few minutes. And Dennis, I want you to be on your best behavior.
What do you mean?
I mean, no standing on your head and showing off. And now, folks...
He hates me because I can stand on my head.
I hate you because your head is flat and you can do it the easy way. It's not fair to the rest of us. Well, here comes the musical end of the program, the McFarlane twins. Hello, Art, George.
Hello, Mr. Benny.
Gee, these two boys do look exactly alike. If George didn't owe me $5, I couldn't tell them apart. By the way, George, when are you going to pay me that money?
Right now. I'm tired of wearing this ring in my nose.
Well, I had to mark you. I didn't want to get that old runaround, you know? Now, fellas, Virginia Bruce should be here pretty soon, so in the meantime, let's have your band number.
Gee, is Virginia Bruce going to be on this program?
That's right.
I think she's terrific. Don't you, George?
I think she's terrific. Don't you, Art?
I think she's terrific. Don't you, Dennis?
Dennis, stop talking to yourself. Now, come on, fellas, let's have that band number and put some real stuff in it. Remember, we're playing for the United States Marines. A bunch of red-blooded, rare-and-tearing guys, eh, Sergeant Wilson?
You said it, buddy. Now tell these guys what you had for breakfast this morning.
Toasty brown, sweet as a nut, grape nuts flakes, of course.
Of course what?
Of course, sir.
That's more like it.
How's that?
Very good, Benny. Now button your lip.
Yes, sir.
Gee, how could we get so tough on breakfast food? Oh, well, play, McFarlane. was Taking a Chance on Love, played by the McFarlane Twins and their orchestra. And, fellas, that was all right. You twins are really going places. And now, boys...
Twins, that's a hot one.
What do you mean, a hot one? It so happens, Dennis, that they are twins.
Oh, yeah? One of them throws his voice and the other one's a dummy.
Believe me, Dennis, there's no ventriloquism involved. They're both flesh and blood.
Then I better quit carving my initials in the one I thought was wood.
Yes. And now, boys, no use waiting. I got to give that kid a hot chocolate with a Mickey in it. Now, boys, I'd like to have you meet that beautiful and talented screen actress, Miss Virginia Bruce. Come on over here and take a bow, Virginia.
Thank you, Jack. Hi, darling.
Well, listen to that. You know, Virginia, you got more applause than I did.
Well, this is my last pair of nylon stockings. I'm glad they're doing a good job.
Oh, is that it? Well, now that you've brought up the subject, Virginia, I've got pretty good-looking legs myself.
Yeah.
Here, look. Not bad, eh?
I'd hate to get an order of mashed potatoes with that many lumps in them.
Well, I've been taking vitamin pills and they don't dissolve, you know? But, I don't know, I think my legs are gorgeous.
And those pink lace garters, did you borrow them from Mary?
Oh, no, Virginia. A girl threw them at me in a burlesque theater. She hooked my ear with one of them, but the other one I had a fight for. What a brawl.
My hand still hurts where you stomped on it.
Well, don't be so grabby. Oh, Virginia, this is our young tenor, Dennis Day.
Hello, Dennis.
Gee, Miss Bruce, this is the happiest moment of my life.
Well.
Just say the word and I'll stand on my head.
Dennis. You'll have to pardon him, Virginia. He's so emotional.
You're panting a little yourself, Daddy.
Oh, yes, I am. And this is our announcer, Don Wilson.
Hello, Mr. Wilson.
How do you do, Miss Bruce? I can't stand on my head for you, but I can shuffle my chins like a deck of cards.
Don, don't act like a schoolboy. Get a load of them, fellas. Huckleberry Hippo. And now, Virginia, I'd like you to meet the twins, Art and George.
I'm glad to know you, boys.
Same here.
See, aren't they cute, Virginia?
My goodness, Jack, I didn't know you had twins.
Oh, they're not mine. They're the McFarlane twins. By the way, Virginia, I understand you're down here making a picture. How's it coming along?
Well, we haven't started shooting yet. Mr. Rathoff, the director, is looking over typical southern locations.
Oh, you mean Gregory Rathoff?
Yes, you ought to meet him, Jack. He has the cutest Russian dialect.
Oh, I know Rathoff and his dialect. We're old friends. Did you tell Gregory you were going to be on my program tonight?
Certainly.
What did he say?
Watch out, Virginia. He's old, but he's a wolf.
Well, I do have my romantic moments. By the way, Virginia... speaking of pictures I've been in...
Who's speaking of pictures you've been in?
I am. You see, I've got a new one coming out pretty soon called The Meanest Man in the World. A nice title, isn't it?
Yeah. But, Jack, that doesn't fit you at all. Why, good heavens, you're not the meanest man in the world.
I'm not?
Of course not. How could anyone be mean who has such a sweet, friendly smile?
Well,
big blue eyes that are always twinkling.
Well, my eyes have been compared to the waters of the Minnetonka. what else, Virginia?
Well, we've already mentioned your lumpy legs.
Oh, those are vitamin pills, you know?
I'm just kidding, Jack. You're really one of the nicest, sweetest, kindest, most considerate...
Most lovable?
Wait for me.
Oh, pardon me. You know, Virginia, it's funny that all the time we've been in Hollywood, you and I have never made a picture together. You know, you'd think that...
Come on, Virginia, let's get going!
Hey, that sounds like Rathoff. What's he doing here?
Oh, he came to pick me up. We're interviewing several local boys to play opposite me in the picture.
Oh, you mean you haven't got a leading man yet?
No. We're looking for a young fellow with one of those charming southern accents.
Well, shut my mouth, honey child. Why'd you all say so sooner? How's that sound, Virginia?
Like a minstrel show, but maybe Radolph will like it.
It's a cinch. When he hears me talking like this, he'll come from...
Open that door or I break it down. I'm a Russian and I'm advancing.
Come on in, Gregory. Well, this is a surprise. How are you, Gregory? I haven't seen you since Hollywood.
Fine, Jack. I sure like it down here in old Virginia.
In old Virginia?
That's what we old Southerns call Kentucky.
That's what you call Virginia. Say, Gregory, how's your picture coming along?
It will be colossal, stupendous. It even might make some money.
Hey, that sounds like it's going to be an epic.
If it's only an epic, I'll blow my brains up. Say, Jack, how can I miss? I've got the most beautiful leading lady. All we need now is a Southern boy for the part of the hero.
I see. Well, I think I can help you out. Listen to this. Your search is ended, sir. I'm at your service. How does that sound?
Like a minstrel show, but maybe I like it.
Good. Now, look, Gregory, have you got the script with you?
Right in my pocket.
Well, now I'm going over in the corner and study this, and right after Dennis's number... Wait a minute, I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny, this is Rochester.
Oh, hello, Rochester. Where are you calling from?
Washington, D.C.
Oh, you're still in Washington. Now, listen, Rochester. You were supposed to be on the bus with me at 10 o'clock this morning to go to Quantico. What happened?
Well, I got some friends here.
Yes?
And at 10 o'clock this morning, I was at a party they gave for me last night.
Well, why'd you have to stay till 10 this morning?
We had a bottle of champagne and we couldn't get the cork out till 9:45.
Well, that must have been some party. Who was there?
Well, there was my brother and his second wife.
Uh-huh.
And my cousin and my brother's first wife.
Uh-huh.
And there was my sister who married a total stranger.
Oh.
And then we also had my Uncle Sylvester who came in from Beverly Hills, California.
I didn't know you had an uncle in Beverly Hills. Where does he live?
360 North Camden Drive.
Wait a minute. That's my address. That's my house.
I've been meaning to tell you, boss, he lives in the garage.
Oh, I thought I saw lights there at night. Now, Rochester, how long has your Uncle Sylvester been living in my garage?
Well, $2 a week, I got $80. 40 weeks, boss.
Well, that's my fault. I should have suspected something when I saw you carrying all those pork chops out to my horse. Well, I'll talk to you about this later. Goodbye.
So long, Mr. Benny.
Imagine his uncle living in my garage. Sing, Dennis. Now, don't run away, Virginia and Gregory. I'm going to study this part.
And things like third dimension, yet we get a trifle weary with Mr. Einstein's theory. So we must get down to earth at times, relax, relieve the tension. No matter what the progress or what may it be proved, the simple facts of life are such they cannot be removed. You must remember this, a kiss is still a kiss, a sigh is just a sigh, a fundamental thing that flies as time goes by. And when two lovers woo, they still say, I love you. On that you can rely. No matter what the future brings, as time goes by. Moonlight and love songs never out of gate. Hearts full of passion, jealousy and hate. Woman needs man, and man must have his mate. That no one can deny. It's still the same old story. A fight for love and glory. A case of do or die.
That was As Time Goes By from Casablanca, starring Franklin D. Roosevelt and Winston Churchill. I mean Humphrey Bogart and Ingrid Bergman. And sung by Dennis Day. Well, Gregory, I glanced over the script and I'm more convinced than ever that I'm just the guy for the part of a Southern boy.
Part nothing. I want a guy that can do the whole thing.
I'll do the whole thing. And I'll be colossal.
Colossal is a big word. Don't kick it around.
You should talk. Well, Virginia, it looks like I'm going to be your leading man.
But, Jack, you haven't even rehearsed the part.
Ah, it's bound to work out. I can just see it in lights. Virginia Bruce and Jack Benny in a Gregory Ratoff production.
Leave my name out of it.
Now, wait a minute, Gregory. Don't run me down till you try me. Now, let's get started with the rehearsal.
Okay, I'll get my technical advisor.
Your technical advisor?
Certainly. He's a real Southern colonel, and he knows all about Dixie. Come on in, colonel.
Is that the colonel?
Hello, stranger.
Slepperman. Well, Slepperman, how long have you been a Southern colonel?
Since Tuesday. Rather put an ad in the paper.
Oh.
But don't you all give me away, all.
I won't, but Slep, I can't imagine you being a technical advisor. What do you know about the South?
Tote that barge. Lift that bale. Mammy's little baby loves softening, softening. Mammy's little baby loves softening bread. I'll take some fun.
Say, that's pretty good.
I tell you, Jack, he's terrific.
So you like him, eh, Ratoff?
His dialect kills me.
Well, what do you say we get started? Let's try a scene from the picture, Gregory, so you can see what I do. A love scene, that's where I shine.
All right, a love scene. Now, Miss Bruce and Mr. Benny, take your places. Now, Jack, it is a hot summer night, and you are waiting for your sweetheart on the veranda.
I see.
Then the butler comes in.
The butler, eh?
Yes. His name is Julep, and you ask him for a piece of candy.
The butler's name is Julep?
Look, it says right here, bring me a mint, Julep.
That's bring me a mint julep. It's a drink made with bourbon.
Bourbon, schmorbon, all I know is vodka.
Oh, Mr. Ratoff, where am I in this scene?
You are in the garden, and you are heartbroken because your lover is going away. You are sniffling a rose.
Sniffling a rose? What's that?
That's the way he talks, Jack. Yesterday he went into a restaurant and ordered a porter horse steak.
Porter horse? Say, he might have been right. Hey, that's a good one.
Why, doctor? I am in charge here.
All right, all right. How does this thing start for you?
The butler has told you that your sweetheart is in the garden. Now you enter the garden. Music.
Oh, Magnolia. Magnolia, honey. Where are you all?
I'm over here by the bird bath, sugar.
Oh, if you're taking a bath, I'll come back later. Goodbye.
Now, wait a minute, Jack. It isn't her. It is night and the gales are bathing.
You mean the nightingales are bathing?
That's what I said. I see.
Okay. Magnolia, honey, I'm a-leaving tonight. But before I go,
There's something I gotta ask you.
Yes, Finch Bottom?
Finch Bottom? Magnolia, honey, I want you to do me the honor of becoming my wife.
Your wife? Oh, Finch Bottom.
Kiss me, Magnolia. Kiss me. Kiss me, Magnolia. Kiss me.
Well, go ahead, Jack. Kiss her.
How can I kiss her when she keeps ducking?
Hold still, will you, Virginia?
All right, let's take that line again.
Excuse me, Jack. Oh, Mr. Radoff, may I speak to you a minute alone?
Certainly. What's on your mind, Virginia?
Well, wait a minute. I better whisper it.
What's the whispering for?
Listen, Gregory.
All right, so he drools a little.
The whispering. Now, come on over here, Virginia, and let's do this love scene.
You better tell him, Gregory.
Sorry, Jack, you cannot have the part.
What do you mean I can't have the part?
In Russia, we are very direct. You stink.
What?
Colossally.
Now, wait a minute, Gregory. Listen, Virginia, I can do this love scene if you'll just give me a chance.
But, Jack, you're so violent, so passionate.
Passionate?
Look, there's steam all over your glasses.
I'll wipe them off. Now, don't worry, Virginia. Let's try it again. And this time, I'll be as gentle as a lamb.
Animal picture, I will not direct.
That's not what I'm talking about. Now, come on, let's go. Magnolia, honey, I want you to do me the honor of becoming my wife.
Your wife? Oh, Finch Bottom.
Kiss me, Magnolia. Kiss me. Was that, Virginia? Do I get the part or not?
Wow, you certainly do as far as I'm concerned.
That's great.
Now kiss Gregory and see what he says.
Gregory!
Kiss me, Finch and Bottom! Kiss me!
Last number of the 18th program in the new Grape Nuts Flakes series, and we'll be with you again next Sunday night at the same time. I want to thank Miss Bruce and Mr. Raptoff for appearing on our program tonight. Miss Bruce will be with us tomorrow when we do a show for you Army boys at Newport News, Virginia, and also Tuesday for you Navy boys at Norfolk. Good night, Dow. Good night, everybody.
This program is for the entertainment of the personnel at the United States Marine Base at Quantico, Virginia, and does not necessarily constitute an endorsement of the product by the Navy Department.
All right, there you have Jack Benny from January 31st. 1948. In just a moment, we will hear the next program in the series. This is Radio Vault on 89.3 WHFR.
I'm Tony Goldwyn. As an actor and a director, I attend a lot of screenings, but there's one that's different. It's important, and it could save your life. A lung cancer screening. You know, I lost my mom to lung cancer when she was just 68 years old. And if she'd had a screening, I might have had her for a lot more years. But by the time her disease was detected, it was too late. It had already progressed to an advanced stage. Lung cancer screening is the key to early detection when the disease is most treatable, even curable. All it takes is a low-dose CT scan, which is quick and painless and requires no special preparation. So if you think that you might be at risk for lung cancer, please talk to your doctor about screening. Early detection could save your life. GoTo for lung cancer is your go-to. For more information about screenings, visit goto.org.
Well,
listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Hi, I'm David Twitchell, host of We Are Not Alone, which airs the first Monday of each month right here on WHFR. We interview scientists and ufologists from around the country and around the world about the UFO-UAP phenomenon. We Are Not Alone has been a staple on WHFR since 2007, and since the Pentagon, Navy, and Air Force have all admitted to the UAP reality, the show's content has become even more prevalent. So join me, David Twitchell, the first Monday of each month at 2 p.m. on WHFR. We are not alone.
The Grape Nuts Flakes program, coming to you from New York City and starring Jack Benny, with Mary Livingston, Dennis Day, Rochester, yours truly, Don Wilson, and our guest conductor, Abe Lyman. Ladies and gentlemen, we have a little surprise for you. Jack wired us that owing to a slight delay coming up on the train from Norfolk, Virginia, he will be just a few minutes late. So while we're waiting for Jack, I'll turn the mic over to his very good friend, the famous star of Showtime, Georgie Jessel.
Thank you, fellas. Hello again. This is Georgie Jessel, pinch hitting for Benny. And I want to tell you folks that I'm very happy to be here tonight for two reasons. First, it's an honor and a pleasure to help Jack out. And second, I must get something for this. And of course, Don, it's nice working with you, too.
Well, thank you, Georgie. I think we'll get along fine.
And by the way, Don, Jack does expect to pay me for this. I mean, he won't take advantage of our friendship, will he?
Oh, no, no, Georgie. Jack wouldn't do a thing like that. But I'm sure he'll compensate you for your work.
Fine. Well, I hope it's with money. You see, Don, I've already got a hand-painted necktie. And I don't like the way Jack paints them anyway.
See? Now, wait a minute, Georgie. You're not really worried about Jack paying you for tonight, are you?
Well, I'm not exactly worried, but I'd like to be on one program where I don't have to write in a part for my lawyer. Well, what happened to Jack, and why is he so late?
Well, Georgie, last week we played camps around Washington, D.C. and Virginia. And Jack and Rochester missed the train at Norfolk.
Missed the train?
Yes, you see, Jack told Rochester to wake him up at 9 a.m., but Rochester overslept, and I imagine Jack was pretty burned up when he woke up.
Imagine missing my own program. Listen, Rochester, there's no excuse for your oversleeping this morning, especially after I gave you that alarm clock.
Well, I was dreaming I was in the ring with Joe Louis, and when the bell rang, I came out fighting.
And what happened?
You know Mr. Louis, he smacked me right back to sleep again.
Look, Rochester, I'm not interested in your dreams.
You're always telling me yours, boss. Remember the night you dreamt you was a mother robin?
Never mind.
And you woke up sitting in your toupee?
On a billiard ball yet. Anyway, Rochester, this is the last time I'm going to take you on a trip east with me. The only time I see you is when you need money. We've been away from home 2 months. You spent more dough than I have.
I ain't no record.
You've spent plenty, and most of the time you lose it in a crap game.
A crap game?
Yes.
Up in Harlem, we call it ivory stock market.
I don't care what you call it. We'll talk about this later.
Say, boss, who's taking your place on the program tonight?
A fellow named Georgie Jessel. He's a great pal of mine.
Mr. Jessel? I never seen him. What does he look like?
Well, I'd say that Jessel was medium height, nice personality, and looked something like an anteater. Although I doubt if he does. Say, is there a radio in this observation car?
There's one right over by that lady.
Oh, yes. Pardon me, madam. Do you mind if I tune in on the radio? I want to hear the Grape Nuts Flakes program.
Is that the show with Jack Benny on it?
Yes. Good heavens, she jumped out the window. Oh, well, everybody can't like me. Now, Rochester, tune in NBC. It's around 65 on the dial.
Yes, sir.
Well, Don, how am I doing so far? Do you think I'm handling the program all right?
Well, to tell you the truth, George, and please don't repeat this to Jack.
Oh, you can trust me, Don.
I think you've given this program new life. Frankly, Jack belongs to the yuck-yuck school of humor.
Oh, yuck-yuck.
Say, Georgie, you've known Jack a long while, haven't you?
Oh, yes. As a matter of fact, Jack and I did an act together in vaudeville. We were known as Myrtle, the dancing horse.
Oh, did you and Jack work in a horse costume?
Oh, yes, and Jack did a great job, even though he had the worst end of it. You know what I mean, Don? He couldn't look out at the audience and wink like I did, huh? By the way, Don, where is Mary?
Here I am. Hello, Georgie.
Hello.
There's Miss Livingston. Doesn't she sound natural?
Yeah. Brace yourself, boss. Here it comes.
She better be careful what she says.
Well, Mary, I guess you're anxious for Jack to get back. It'll seem rather strange working with me, won't it?
No, I like to work with you, Georgie. You want to know something? Now, don't repeat this to Jack,
will
you?
Oh, you can trust me.
Well, believe me, it gets pretty tiresome week after week looking at that blank face of his. Looks like a pot of library paste.
Whoever saw a library paste with big blue eyes?
Well, Mary, after all, I'm not so much to look at myself.
But at least you're different. You smile and laugh once in a while. Jack never laughs.
Well, my teeth don't slip out.
That's a good one.
Shut up. Now, you shut up, Rochester. My teeth don't slip out.
No, sir. You hold them in better than anybody.
Quiet now. I want to hear this.
Say, Mary, I'd like to ask you something, and believe me, you're the first one I've mentioned this to. What do you think Jack's going to give me for taking his place on the program tonight?
Well, first he'll come in and ask you how much you want.
Yes?
Then he'll offer you half of that.
And if I won't take it?
He'll pour a knife on you.
Can you imagine that?
Well, Mary, you can't be serious. My goodness, he isn't that tight.
He isn't, eh? Listen, Georgie, Jack has been traveling around the East for 8 weeks, and he's still got California air in his pocketbook.
Oh, he must have opened it up to let the moth see Radio City.
Rochester.
He ain't no good at all.
Yeah, I wish this train would get in.
And, George, do you want me to tell you something else?
What is it?
Well, Jack took me to the Stork Club the other night, and when the waiter brought the check...
What's the matter? What are you laughing at?
Well, Jack pulled his violin out of his vest and said, "Go away, I work here."
That's a big fib.
Well, Mary, you've given me a very vivid picture of what I'll have to go through when Jack comes in. Anyway, let's have a band number from Abe Lyman. And play something loud, Abe. My mother's listening in, and she hasn't got a radio. She just opens the window. Hit it, Abe. Hit it.
Look, Rochester, we're getting into the Penn Station.
That's right.
New York, New York, all out. Last one off the train is a pot of library paste. Catch on?
Grab those bags, Rochester. I want to rush over to the studio.
Okay.
I'll go right to my hotel and pack the trunk. Remember, we're leaving town tomorrow. Oh, Porter! Porter!
That was Brazil, played by Abe Lyman and his band. And I must say, Abe, after hearing the boys, that I'm surprised the way Jack ran down your orchestra a couple of weeks ago. He shouldn't do that.
Of course he shouldn't. My music is all right.
Well, that I wouldn't say, but Jack should never mention it. By the way, Abe, I don't know whether you know this or not, but I have been writing an autobiography. Autobiography. That means a story of my life.
Thanks.
Oh, you're welcome. Inasmuch as we've been friends for years, I've got something in it about you. Now, is that okay?
Yeah, but don't put nothing in about that dame in Cincinnati.
Oh, don't worry, I won't. I'll simply make Snitcher a bon vivant, a raconteur, an entrepreneur. Is that all right with you?
Yeah, just leave out that dame in Cincinnati.
Oh, I will, I will. You see, this book I'm writing, it's called So Help Me, and it ought to be out
any
day.
Now, wait a minute, Georgie. Here comes Dennis Day. Do you know him?
No, not personally, no.
Well, you'll like him, Georgie. He's a great kid, although he's a little naive.
Oh, you just leave Dennis to me. I'll handle him all right.
I'll bet you a dollar he'd drive you nuts.
All right, it's a bet.
Here he is, Georgie. Well, hello. Hello, Dennis.
Hello, Mr. Benny. Did you have a nice trip?
Nice trip, Benny. What is this?
Hey, Don, did Mr. Benny miss the train in Norfolk, Virginia?
Wait a minute, Dennis. It's Jessel. Jessel.
Where's that?
Well, I've lost 35 cents already. Now, listen, Dennis, I'm just taking Jack's place until he gets here.
Jack who?
Here's your dollar, Mary.
Thanks.
Hey, what's going on?
Why, nothing, Dennis. I just bet Mary a dollar that you couldn't drive me nuts.
She wins more money that way.
Well, all I can say is this entire event looks good for a total loss to me, I'll tell you.
Hello, fellas. Hello, here I am.
It's sure good to be back.
And am I glad to see you, Jack. Believe me.
Me too. I kind of miss you, old pal.
So did I, Jack. Boy, am I tickled to see you.
Oh, yes, yes, of course, certainly. I'm tight except for my teeth that slip out, and I got a face like a pot of library paste.
Doesn't have to be in a pot.
Well, there was a radio on the train. I heard every word you fellas said. I was fine loyally talking behind my back.
I didn't say anything about you, Mr. Benny.
I know you didn't, Dennis.
I just got here.
I know that, too. Well, hello, Georgie. How did you like taking my place tonight?
I will know in a little while.
Well, I appreciate your coming over and helping me out. It was a great display of friendship.
Here it comes, Georgie.
I'm ready. Now, look, Jack, we're very good friends, you know. But this is my business, the same as yours.
I understand that now. But look, Georgie.
Look, nothing. You wired me to come here, I didn't expect to get paid.
Well, take it easy, Georgie. I'll give you a check for whatever you think your time is worth. Now, what do you want?
Well, now, Jack, let me put it this way. If I don't sleep well tonight, it should be from happiness.
Now, don't beat around the bush, Georgie. How much do you want?
I'll take $500. But if you put down that knife, we'll start at $1,000.
I'll give you $500. Let's not argue about it. Now, let's see. Where's my checkbook? Gosh, I don't think I've...
Here's a blank check, Mr. Benny.
Thanks. Now, let's see. If I'd only brought my fountain...
Here's a fountain pen, Mr. Benny.
Go away! Well, I got the check and fountain pen. Might as well start writing.
I may be wrong, but I think your hair just went a shade grayer.
Quiet. February 17th, 1900, and now the amount.
Now, wait a minute. This is 1943, Jack, not 45.
Oh, pardon me. Now, just a second. Pay to the order of... Say, how do you want this made out? George Jessel or Georgie Jessel?
Just put down man, $500.
All right, here's your check.
Well, now, thank you very much. Well, I guess I'll be running along now, and I'll see you tomorrow night at the banquet, Jack.
Yeah.
What banquet is that, Mr. Benny?
Well, next Sunday's my birthday, and since we'll be in Toronto, some of my friends here in New York are throwing a little party for me tomorrow night. Who's going to be there, Georgie?
All your pals on Broadway, everybody, from Benny Rubin to Fred Allen.
Fred Allen? Now, wait a minute. This is my birthday party, and I don't want Alan there.
But, Jack, we need a crowd. We need everybody we can get to blow out the candles.
Now, cut that out. I'm not nearly as old as you are, Georgie, and you know it.
Go on. I read in Newsweek magazine yesterday that you were 47 years old.
47? That's a misprint.
You mean it should be 74?
No. I mean, it should be 33, like I feel. All right, Alan. All right, Alan can come to the party.
I knew that would happen.
I knew it. Why don't I put commas there? All right, comma, Alan can come to the party. Well, look at it. But I don't want him to make any speeches about me.
Well, don't you worry, Jack, because I'm the only speaker at the table, comma, and I got my speech. I have my speech all prepared.
You have? What are you going
to
say?
Well, something like this. Gentlemen, we are gathered here tonight to pay tribute to a man who, some odd years ago, was born in a log cabin near what is now the town of Waukegan, Illinois.
Log cabin?
There was great rejoicing in this frontier settlement.
Frontier.
And friendly Indians came from far and wide to bring gifts of beads and moccasins to the first white child born in this wilderness.
Now, wait a minute, Georgie. When I was born, Waukegan was a good-sized town. I'm only 33.
All right, I'll say you're 33.
Good.
And to make that believable, I'll wear diapers.
I don't care what you wear.
All right, thank you very much, Jack, and I'll see you tomorrow.
So long, Georgie.
So long. So long.
Oh, darn it. Darn it, I forgot something. Oh, Georgie, wait a minute. I want to ask you something.
Quack, what is it?
Georgie, I hear you're writing a book with a lot of anecdotes about yourself and people in show business. Is that right?
Yes, it is.
Well, does my name come up in it?
Oh, sure, Jack. Several times.
Well, look, Georgie.
Yeah?
Do me a favor, will you?
Yeah?
Don't mention that dame in Cincinnati. Yeah, I mean, you know. Well, so long, Georgie.
So long. Come on.
Well, go ahead, Dennis. Let's have your song.
What do you want to see Georgie about?
I want to make his check a little higher, you know. Sing, kid.
Forever, although you're far away.
was Moonlight Mood, sung by Dennis Day. And very, very good, Dennis.
Thank you. You know, Mr. Benny, I think it was awfully nice of Mr. Jessel to come over here and help you out tonight.
What do you mean, nice? You got $500 for it.
Well, for heaven's sake, you don't expect Georgie to come over here and work for nothing, do you?
Well, why not? He's a friend of mine.
Well, would you work on his show for nothing?
Listen, Don, I'm talking to Miss Livingston.
Well, would you?
That's Don's question. Think of your own.
I've got one.
Shut up. Now, look, look, fella, Georgie was here. He did a good job. He got paid, so let's forget about it. And now I have an announcement to make. Ladies and gentlemen, here is important information for all of you who have friends, relatives, or sweethearts in our armed forces abroad. If you want your letters to get overseas quickly and safely, use V-mail, which is dispatched by the most expeditious means.
Expeditious? What's the idea of pulling those big words?
Listen, Abe, expeditious isn't a big word.
Anything over three letters is showing off.
Abe, I know you have a set of blocks, but some of them must be missing there. One leader I'd like to get that's been through third grade. Let me finish this, will you, Abe? Huh? Will you go over and lay down someplace, or lie down, excuse me. Among the advantages of V-mail is the fact that it's the fastest of all wartime communications. But remember, folks, V-mail is not for domestic use. Only use it when you write right to the boys overseas. And our listeners in Canada should go to their local post office for information. Thank you very much. And fellas, my gang, now speaking of Canada, you know we're all leaving for Montreal, Ottawa, and Toronto next Tuesday night.
How are you going to send us, by V-mail?
No, we're going by train. And here's something else. Come in. Yes?
Pardon me, I work for Mr. Jessel, and he sent me back here for his cane.
Oh.
My name is Joe Besser.
Lesser?
No, Besser!
Oh, yes. Yes, Besser, I never get that right. Well, Mr. Besser, what does the cane look like?
Something like Jessel, only taller.
Oh, well, he must have left his cane in my dressing room. Now, look, Mr. Besser, my dressing room. You go out this door here, turn to your right. No, turn to your left. Then you walk down three steps till you get to the corridor. Then you turn to your right again. No, then take your next
left. Shut up, not so fast!
Oh, pardon me. Well, just ask an usher, and he'll tell you where it is. Goodbye.
Goodbye. Oh, say, Mr. Benny, I'm going to be at your banquet tomorrow night.
Oh, my birthday party? Well, you know, Mr. Besser, next Sunday, I'll be 33 years old.
You old crazy you.
Mean crazy. I feel like a kid. Now, getting back to our Canadian trip, fellas, when we get to Toronto next week, I want you all to be... I'll take it. Hello?
Hello, Mr. Benny. This is Rochester.
Good. Rochester, did you pack my trunk?
Yes, sir, and it's on its way to Toledo.
Toledo? We're going to Toronto.
Toronto's in Ohio.
Toledo's in Ohio. We're going to Ontario.
I thought you said we were going to Canada.
Look, Rochester, Toledo is in Ohio and Ontario's in Canada. And Toronto's in Ontario. What are you laughing at?
Boss, we sound like Abbott and Costello.
Now, Rochester, concentrate. Here's what you do. Call up the express company here in New York. Tell them to call the express company in Toledo and have them send my trunks to Toronto.
Not so fast!
Rochester, because this is the worst mess that I've ever been in. And I want...
Well, you are listening to Radio Vault. That was Jack Benny there from February 7 of 1943. Georgie Jessel as his special guest, as you just heard. And in just a moment, we're going to continue with more of our classic entertainment. We've got the Mel Blanc Show on tap. Background sounds today is Mr. Joe Sample. So Mel Blanc, he's coming up from January 21st to 47. For our final hour today, we will listen to the Lux Radio Theater. This, once again, is Radio Vault, coming your way every Tuesday between 10 and 1 o'clock in the afternoon.
Hi, this is Missy J. And I am inviting you to a new day and a new time, Thursdays from 10 a.m. until 1 p.m. We still have the same vibe, bringing you New Jack Swing, Soul, R&B, Jazz, and we end with Gospel. So won't you tune in to the station that makes waves while we branch out farther into the community with good music, vital information for the mind, body, and soul. WHFR 89.3.FM on your dial.
Saturday, January 18th at 7 p.m., the Henry Ford College Music Department will proudly present the second installment of their annual Henry Ford Big Band Concert Series, this time featuring Detroit-based jazz bassist Trevor Lamb. A member of multiple local projects, including the Eat It Up Trio, several regular jam sessions around town, and the Trevor Lamb Trio, Trevor Lamb joins the Henry Ford College Big Band for one night only from the Adrey Auditorium inside the McKenzie Fine Arts Center on the campus of Henry Ford College, located at 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, Michigan, at 7 p.m. on Saturday, January 18th. Can't make it in person? WHFR will broadcast the concert live right here on these airwaves. That's Trevor Lamb and the Henry Ford Big Band, live from the Adrey Auditorium on the campus of Henry Ford College, or broadcast live at 89.3 FM in the Dearborn area and online at www.whfr.fm, Saturday, January 18th at 7 p.m.
Presents the Mel Blanc Show, written by Mac Benoff, with Mary Jane Croft, Joe Kearns, Hans Conried, Alan Reed, the Sportsman, Victor Miller and his orchestra, and starring the creator of the voice of Bugs Bunny.
What's up, Doc?
Yes, Colgate Tooth Powder, for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle, brings you the Mel Blanc Show, with Mel playing his new character, Zookie.
Hello, everybody. Hello, everybody. Hi.
And starring himself in person, Mel Blanc.
Hiya, folks.
Conclusive proof that a young swain has fallen in love with his lady fair is when he begins to see in her the close features of his family. For instance, in the little town where Mel Blanc lives, we hear Henry Adams saying to his girlfriend, Susan,
"Gosh, Susan, you're awfully pretty. You look just like my sister."
And in another part of town, Roy Davis is saying to his girl,
"You know, Shirley, you're lovely. You look just as my mother did when she was your age."
And in the Colby house, where Mel Blanc is sitting with his girlfriend, Betty, Mel is saying,
"Gosh, Betty, you're very pretty. You look just like my uncle.
Last week, Mel, in an attempt to save the Colby family from eviction, pretended he was a Viennese doctor. However, the plan didn't work, and now we find Mel and Betty in Mel's Fix-It Shop talking about the incident.
Gosh, everything was going fine, too.
Until the other doctor asked you where you studied.
Yeah, and all I could think of was Prenuviten Fluten Gluten in Salzburg.
If only you hadn't said Prenuviten Fluten Gluten.
Can you imagine that guy never heard of a place called Salzburg? Oh, by the way, Betty, I got a circular in the mail that your father might be interested in. Here it is.
Oh, prefabricated housing. What does it say?
Buy the Cracker Jack prefabricated house. Small, inconvenient, and poorly constructed. This is the ideal type of housing for veterans.
It's all right for you to joke, but Father and I'll be living out in the street if something doesn't happen. Or maybe even a cellar.
Oh, that's wonderful.
That's wonderful, living in a cellar?
Sure, your father's always throwing me down the steps. Now let's see him try and throw me up.
Mel, stop talking like that. You know, Father's beginning to like you. Why, just last night I heard him say, Mel, you can hang around the house all you want to.
Yeah, but you didn't see him pointing to the rafter. Speaking of the... here comes your father now.
Hello, Betty.
Hello, Father.
Mel Blanc, you idiot.
Hello, Mr. Colby.
I gave you a cash register to fix for my supermarket, and what did you do?
Oh, I meant to ask you, Mr. Colby. I'm missing a few parts from an old slot machine.
I know that, you nincompoop. This morning my cashier tried to ring up $1.20.
Well, what happened?
He got three cherries straight across.
Gee, that's too bad.
That's terrible. The next customer hit the jackpot. Oh, but I can't be angry today. The bank is giving me a big loan. I'll be able to buy our house and we won't be evicted.
Father, that's wonderful.
Yes, that is. If everything goes well when Banker Grimes comes to the house tonight, I think I can impress Banker Grimes and Betty can make a good impression on him. And you, Mel, can make a good impression, too.
You really think so, Mr. Colby?
Yes, on the sidewalk if you don't stay away from my house.
All right, Mr. Colby, I can take a hint. And I won't... Hey, wait a minute. Banker Grimes is a very social man. He'd be very impressed if you had some rich foreign relatives.
I don't have any rich foreign relatives.
You do now. I'm a good actor. I can do it.
Huh?
I'll be your rich foreign relative.
You mean you...
You want the house?
Well, yes.
Or you want to live in the street?
That's a deal. Well, Mel, that's what I call quick thinking. I'll do anything to get that loan.
Oh, wait a minute. Here comes Professor Pochnik. Oh, hello, Professor Pochnik.
Hello! Hello! Well, if it ain't my four best friends, Mel, Betty, and Mr. Colby.
Professor Pochnik, that's only three.
What am I, an enemy?
Well, we have to go, Professor Pochnik. Nice to have seen you. Come on, Betty. See you at 9, cousin.
Mel, why are you looking so down-faced for, why?
Oh, I'm always talking out of turn. Professor, I'm afraid I promised Mr. Colby the impossible.
Mel, there is no such word in the dictionary like impossible. Impossible, that's a bad word. Forget it. Could be, that is a word. Que, u, a, la, de, be, a. Could be.
Oh, but this is really impossible.
I just told you there is no such word. You couldn't use it. Don't even think about the impossible. Now, what is the trouble?
Well, I'm going to help Mr. Colby get a loan from Banker Grimes, so I got to make believe I'm some foreign relative who is rich and high class.
That is impossible. However, under Professor Pochnik's dramatic course, the impossible becomes could be. Now, I have two courses of teaching. The first is in 10 easy lessons.
And the other course?
One hard lesson. We try the hard one. Now, first, we are impersonating a tough guy. You listen, wise guy, see? From whom you getting your vodka, from whom, huh? See? Now you do it.
Okay.
Give a listen, wise guy, see? From whom you're getting your vodka, from whom, huh? See? Huh? That's perfect. Now we try another type, the Western type.
Western?
Yes. Coming here, tax you all. I'm a reckoning the hanker to fixing up that old corral. Give a yippee-hi-yay and a home on the gas ray. Take it, Pod. Pod. Mel, that's you. Pod is Western talk for rustler.
Oh, all right.
Coming here, tax you all.
Oh, wait a minute, Professor. This is all American.
Well, frankly, Mel, on farmers, I am not so good. But for you, I am trying. Now, make believe you are a count. The first thing you do is bow from the waist. Bow from the waist. Bow from the waist.
I hope I do all right. Bow from the waist. I can't wait till tonight. Bow from the waist. Booster from the waist.
Now the sportsman Victor Miller and his orchestra with My Pretty Girl.
Mr. Colby obtain a loan, Mel has promised to impersonate some rich foreign relatives, thereby hoping to impress Banker Grimes. Mel has left the fix-it shop to get the costumes he'll need. Meanwhile, the shop is in charge of his assistant, Zookie, who is now fixing a radio.
Gee, what a big radio. Hmm. It must be at least 9 to 2. It's 8 to 2. It's 6 to 2. Crystal said. Oh, gee, it's got an automatic record. It plays one record at a time. Now let me stop.
Zookie, stay away from that radio. Look, Zookie, help me get into this costume. I got... Uh-oh. It's Mr. Cushing, my lodge president.
Hello, man.
Well, greetings, mighty potentate. Ugga-ugga-boo-ugga-boo-boo-ugga. What's the matter, mighty potentate? You look like you haven't slept a wink.
Well, Mel, last night I had a terrible nightmare for 4 hours.
And then you woke up?
No, then I went to sleep. My wife turned on the other side. Yeah, the way that woman snores. Sounds like the last dregs of a seltzer bottle. Now I know why Richard won't open that door.
Why don't you try using a clothespin?
I did, Mel, but I couldn't squeeze her neck into that little opening.
Say, how'd you ever come to meet your wife, mighty potentate?
Well, I'll tell you, Mel, it was a blind date. I'll never forget the first thing I said when I first saw her.
What was that? I get it. She was a scream, huh? Well, wasn't she insulted when you did that?
Oh, no, no. She'd been out on blind dates before. In fact, with her, a groan was a compliment.
You still didn't have to marry her, did you?
Well, Mel, it was a rebound thing, you see. I'd been going out with another girl. Oh, I'll never forget her. Every night I used to whisper in her ear, Gwendolyn, I adore you.
Gwendolyn, you're my dream girl. Gwendolyn, I'm mad about you.
But she left me because of one slight mistake.
What was that?
Her name was Emma.
Well, I don't know why I'm standing here telling you all this. Just I've got no one to talk to.
No, I know just how you feel, mighty potentate. If I don't help Mr. Colby impress Banker Grimes tonight, the Colbys may move and I may lose Betty.
Lucky boy.
Well, don't joke, Mr. Cushing. Would you want to be single all your life?
Ha! Well, I've got to be going now. I hope everything turns up all right at the Colby house.
Well, thanks. Where are you going?
Well, I can do one of two things. I can go to the movies and see Duel in the Sun, or I can go home and fight in the shade.
Well, have a good time at the movies. Well, goodbye, mighty potentate. Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo, ugga.
So long, Mel. Ugga, ugga, boo, ugga, boo, boo.
Well, now to get over to the Colby house with these costumes. Gosh, it's going to be quite a job impersonating a bunch of rich foreign relatives.
Well, Betty, everything's going along fine.
Yes, Father, and Mel should be here any minute.
And if he does a good job of that foreign relative stuff, it should cinch the deal.
Oh, leave it to Mel, Father.
Well, Mr. Grimes, did you enjoy the dinner?
Ah, it was delicious. Of course, you didn't have to go to the trouble of baking a cake and having the icing spell out $8,000. I got the point when the alphabet soup spelled out police.
Now, about the loan, Mr. Grimes. Have a cigar.
Well, now, Mr. Colby, I think the loan will go through.
A cigar? Take the whole box.
Well, there's just one point that we have to clear up.
Well, go on, have a cigar.
But I think we can overcome the point and get your hands up that box. The, the question I want to ask you, Mr. Colby, is, do you intend to take a trip outside the country?
Why, no. What makes you ask that?
Well, now, we had an unfortunate experience. We made a $10,000 loan to a handkerchief manufacturer. Now, we don't know whether or not it was the nature of the business.
Why, what happened?
In 6 months, he blew.
He blew.
Little industry joke. Seems that he had a cousin in Ecuador, and now that's where he absconded. Now, I hope you don't have any relatives outside the country.
Oh, no, of course not. Bonsoir, cousin Cole. Oh, just the French dry cleaners. Now, about the loan, Mr. Grimes.
I'll open it this time.
I kiss you on both cheeks.
You stop that.
Oh, excuse me.
What's going on here?
I am Monsieur Colby's cousin.
His cousin?
Oui. Cousin Colby, when are you coming to visit with us? We are dying to see you. Cousin Colby, talk to me. Cousin Colby, stop sharpening that razor.
Pardon me, what part of France are you from?
London.
London is in England.
Madrid?
Madrid is in Spain.
Where is Pomona?
Are you sure that you are a Frenchman?
Oh, you do not believe me. I show you. I roll up my pants leg. Voila, what you see?
A garter.
What it says on the garter?
Paris.
That proves I am a Frenchman.
Well, now, in that case, you'll surely understand what I'm saying. Je ne sais quoi, voulez-vous, parlez-vous, vous, français?
Well, goodbye, Cousin Colby. The boat is leaving.
Mr. Colby, I don't like this. I thought you had no relatives outside the country.
Now, Mr. Grimes, I can explain everything. Please excuse me just a minute. Betty.
Yes, Father.
Betty, we can't tell Mr. Grimes. We've tried to deceive him, but we must stop Mel.
Oh, I'll try, Father.
Is this where Senor Colby lives?
I have no relatives in South America.
Oh, but Cousin Colby, remember what we made up. I mean, how our family's made up.
Pardon me, are you one of Mr. Colby's South American relatives?
See, I am a very rich bullfighter. I remember the last fight. We are in the middle of the arena. I look at the bull.
The bull look at me. I look at the bull. The bull look at me. I look at the bull. The bull look at me. You want to know something? The bull is better looking than me.
What part of South America are you from?
Colombia.
What part of Colombia?
Eastern Colombia.
Whereabouts?
Broadway at night. Cousin Colby. Cousin Colby, I know you haven't seen me in 10 years, but put me down.
All right.
First take me back inside the window.
Colby, is that a way to treat a relative of yours? Now I want to talk to him. Sit him down, wine him, and dine him.
I think I go now.
Why?
You said wine me, dine me. Cousin Colby looks like he wants to shave me. So long.
Colby, there's something highly irregular about this.
Now, please, Mr. Grimes, have a cigar. I never saw these relatives before.
What did you say, Mr. Colby?
I said, have a relative. I never saw these cigars before.
Товарищ Колби, Гранис Требдавайч, Латука, Спокойнее, Проздое, and regards from Uncle Patrick.
Another relative?
That's right, Kiro. I haven't seen Uncle Colby for 10 years. Let's eat.
You haven't seen him for 10 years, and the first thing you want to do is eat?
That's right. Borscht is thicker than blood.
Now you interest me very much. I've always wanted to obtain the first-hand information about the USSR.
USSR? Oh, I get it. That's Russia spelled backwards.
I've always been very interested in the Russian experiment.
What do you mean, experiment? I had a mother and father just like you did.
Yes. Now, just what did you do in Russia?
Me? I'm the greatest actor in Moscow. I play gangster parts. Listen. You listen to wise guy, see? From whom you getting your vodka from whom, huh? See? Whom, huh? Whom? Well, I was wonderful. Our great critic, Yasha Fiddler, he gave me the highest award. 4 bulgas and a boatman.
Now, this has gone far enough, Mr. Colby. And what I've seen tonight is enough. You're not getting any loan from my bank.
Oh, then give me back my cigar.
And for making a fool out of me, I'm going to break every cigar in this box.
Did you hear that, Mr. Colby?
Yes, and for making a fool out of me, Mel Blanc, I'm going to break every bone in your box.
So, Banker Grimes gave Mr. Colby the loan, and now your girl Betty won't have to leave town. Mel, that's wonderful.
Yes, Professor Pochnik, for a minute I thought I was going to be killed.
Well, what saved you?
Well, Mr. Grimes turned out to be an amateur actor himself, and he enjoyed my performance.
A Pochnik pupil pleases people. And now you want that I should act out the gangster again, eh?
Yeah.
All right. Give a listen, wise guy, see? From who you getting your vodka from, hoo-ha, see?
Fine. Well, is that what you wanted to learn, Mr. Grimes?
Yes, Mel. I'll see if I have it right. Give a listen, wise guy, see? From who you getting your vodka from, hoo-ha, Mel Blanc will be back in just a minute.
This is Mel Blanc saying thanks for listening. Good night, and
that's all, folks.
And this is Bud Easton reminding you that Colgate tooth powder for a breath that's sweet and teeth that sparkle brings you the Mel Blanc Show every Tuesday at this time. Be sure to join us again next Tuesday night for more fun with Mel and the people you'll meet in Mel Blanc's Fix-It Shop. Now, more and more fats and oils are needed to make more and more of the things we need so badly. Your butcher pays you a high price for every pound of waste fat you take to him. So do fill it in and turn it in. Remember, Mel Blanc at the same time every Tuesday night. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
once again getting ready for the final hour of Radio Vault. Have on tap Goodbye Mr. Chips from the Lux Radio Theater from 1939. That's coming up. In the meantime, Mr. George Duke.
Saturday, January 18th at 7 p.m., the Henry Ford College Music Department will proudly present the second installment of their annual Henry Ford Big Band Concert Series, this time featuring Detroit-based jazz bassist Trevor Lamb. A member of multiple local projects, including the Eat It Up Trio, several regular jam sessions around town, and the Trevor Lamb Trio, Trevor Lamb joins the Henry Ford College Big Band for one night only from the Adrey Auditorium inside the McKenzie Fine Arts Center on the campus of Henry Ford College, located at 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, Michigan, at 7 p.m. on Saturday, January 18th. Can't make it in person? WHFR will broadcast the concert live right here on these airwaves. That's Trevor Lamb and the Henry Ford Big Band, live from the Adrey Auditorium on the campus of Henry Ford College, or broadcast live at 89.3 FM in the Dearborn area and online at www.whfr.fm, Saturday, January 18th at 7 p.m.
Hi, I'm Bill Mike Holloway, and if you're yearning and burning for some boogie rock, baby, that's what I got. On the Go With The Flow Mike Holloway Show, every Friday, 4 to 6 p.m., on WHFR.FM, the station that is always making waves.
If you're like me, 60 and retired, making ends meet, especially here at the supermarket and drugstore, is tough. I'm so blessed to have found BenefitsCheckup.org. It's a free and confidential website from the National Council on Aging that connected me to $1,200 a year in programs that help pay for food, medicine, utilities, and more. Maybe it can help you. BenefitsCheckup.org.
The Afro-Lock, baby.
I like
listener-supported, non-commercial radio from the campus of Henry Ford College. This is WHFR Dearborn.
Lux presents Hollywood. Radio Theater brings you Laurence Olivier and Edna Best in Goodbye, Mr. Chips. Special guest, Mr. James Hilton, author of our play. Ladies and gentlemen, your producer, Mr. Cecil B. DeMille. Greetings from Hollywood, ladies and gentlemen. Thanksgiving comes but twice a year. Some of us will carve our turkeys this coming Thursday. Others will celebrate November 30th. I don't think the date matters very much. Canada celebrates Thanksgiving until another time. Perhaps we really need more than one Thanksgiving Day to cover all the things we have to be thankful for. Freedom above all. Peace, good health, and those we love. Apropos of Thanksgiving, the Lux Radio Theater has received a letter which we value highly for its friendly spirit. It says in part, in addition to the big things in life, I'm thankful for many smaller things which add to the joy of living. Among these is the Lux Radio Theater, which is a highlight of the week for our family. And another highlight which helps us in many ways every day in the year is Lux Flake. So here's wishing you and the Lux Radio Theater and Lux Flakes many happy Thanksgivings to come. We appreciate Mrs. J.J. Carter's gracious letter. And tonight, we're also grateful to Mr. James Hilton. But stories like Goodbye, Mr. Chips are still being written. In my opinion, Chips is one of the most engaging characters in literature since Dickens. I was particularly delighted with the success of the picture because it was directed by my assistant director of silent picture days, Sam Wood. Our cast tonight is headed by two stars who are making their first appearance in the Lux Radio Theater, Laurence Olivier and Edna Best. Mr. Olivier is an actor who refuses to take his stardom very seriously, and that makes him an ideal Mr. Chips. When Laurence Olivier learned that, in the Hollywood idiom, he was considered terrific in Wuthering Heights, his answer was, "I wonder how I did it." As Catherine, we have Miss Edna Best, distinguished star of the London and New York stage. Miss Best is in Hollywood for the RKO picture, Swiss Family Robinson. Now we pay a visit to the peaceful quadrangle of Brookfield School, where, during the past few hundred years, many thousands of boys have investigated the mysteries of Latin grammar. And we pay a visit to a gentleman who is a tradition at Brookfield, a certain Mr. Chipping, commonly called Chips. The curtain goes up on the first act of Goodbye, Mr. Chips, starring Laurence Olivier in the title role and Edna Best as Catherine. When you're getting on in years, between 80 and 90, you get very sleepy sometimes, and the hours seem to pass like lazy cattle moving across a landscape. It was like that for Mr. Chips, as the autumn term progressed and the days shortened, till it was actually time to light the gas before evening classes. For Mr. Chips, like some old sea captain, still measured time by signals of the past. And well he might, for he lived at Mrs. Wickett's, just across the road from Brookfield School.
Chipping, shall I light the fire? Oh, Mr. Chipping, are you awake, sir?
Oh, good evening, Mrs. Wickett. Is that the bell for callover?
Yes, it is, sir. Well, I'd best stir up a fire.
Thank you, and you might bring me a cup of tea before prep, will you?
The tea's right there, an old pot of it, sir.
Oh, so it is. And the cake, Mrs. Wickett. You didn't forget the cake, did you?
A walnut cake, if you'll only take the trouble to look, sir.
Oh, yes, thank you, Mrs. Wickett.
You're expecting the boys in, sir?
No, I've learned never to expect anything, Mrs. Wickett. I always make a point of being taken completely by surprise.
Well, I'd a mind to go visit
him
this evening,
sir. Had you? Well, run along. I'm quite old enough to take care of myself.
Very well, sir. Good evening.
Good evening, Mrs. Wickett. Mrs. Wickett! The door! Mrs. Wickett! Oh, well, never mind. Do it myself. Well, hello.
Please, sir. Does Mr. Chips live here?
Mr. Chips? Yes, he does. In fact, you're looking at him.
Oh.
Well, what can I do for you?
I was told you wanted me, sir.
And who told you that?
The boy, sir. They said go off to Mr. Chips and ring the bell and tell him he wants to see you.
I see. Well, you better come inside. Now, sit down.
Thank you, sir.
The boys were quite right, you know. I did want to see you. I wanted you to have some tea with me.
Oh, thank you, sir.
I haven't seen you before. How's that?
I've only just come out of the sanatorium, sir.
Huh?
I've been there since the beginning of the term. Measles, sir.
Ah, yes. Well, that accounts for it. Tell me, what's the name?
Linford, sir.
Tell me, Linford, what do you think of Brookfield? So far, I mean.
Well, sir, I'm not quite sure yet.
I know. But you like it when you get used to it. Just now, you're a bit afraid of it, eh?
Well, yes, sir.
Yes, so was I at first. But that was a long time ago. 63 years, to be precise. Yes, when I first went into Big Hall and saw all those boys, I tell you, I was quite scared. But it didn't last long. I soon made myself at home, so will you.
Weren't there a lot of other new boys that term, sir?
Eh? But bless my soul, I wasn't a boy at all. I was a man. A young man of 22. A master.
Oh. But, sir...
Yes?
If you were 22 then...
Yes?
You must be very old now, sir.
Well, I'm certainly no chicken. Yes, when I came to Brookfield in 1870, the place was just the same then as it is now. Even the names of the boys were the same. Ainsworth, Atwood, Avonmore, Babcock, Baggs, Barnard, Bassenthwaite. Yes, almost the same. Old Mr. Weatherby was head then. Fine man, fine man. I'm probably the only man in the world who remembers old Weatherby. And the boys. I remember them all. 63 years ago, Linford. And I can still hear their names as they call them off before the classes. Ainsworth, Atwood, Avonmore, Babcock, Baggs, Barnett, Bassenthwaite.
Mr. Chip, sir. Are you asleep, sir? Shall I go now, sir? Mr. Chip.
Barnard.
Bassenthwaite.
Bickle.
Bickle. Pardon me, sir. Are you Mr. Chipping, the new master?
Yes, I am.
The head would like to see you in his study.
Thank you.
Come in, Mr. Chipping. Come in. Welcome to Brookfield.
Thank you, Mr. Weatherby.
Sit down. I understand you've been a master before.
Yes, sir, for 1 year at Melbourne.
1 year, yes. You are a young man, Mr. Chipping, and Brookfield is an old foundation. However, youth and age often combine well. But don't let the boys play tricks with you. I gather that discipline was not always your strong point at Melbourne.
Well, no, perhaps not.
Never mind, you have another chance here. Take up a firm attitude from the beginning. That's the secret of it.
I shall, Mr. Weatherby.
You will take prep this evening, Mr. Chipping. At the start of the year, you may find the boys inclined to be a bit restive. But I trust you will encounter no great difficulty.
I think so, sir.
Bagley, I hear.
He is not.
It's the new master, Chipping.
Chipping? What's he like?
Sit down, sir.
Chip for you, chaps. Here he is.
Good evening. As you know, this is a period of quiet study. You may busy yourselves in any way you wish.
Oh, thank you, sir.
Quiet, please.
Please, sir, what is your name?
My name is Mr. Chipping.
Did you say Chip, sir?
I said Chipping.
Thank you, Mr. Chipping.
You there in the second row, you with the red hair. Did you drop that desk lid?
Yes, sir.
What's your name?
Collie, sir.
Very well, Collie. You have 100 lines.
100 lines?
Did you hear me, Collie?
But 100 lines, sir. All I did was to drop...
Did you hear me, Collie?
Yes, sir.
Hello,
Chipping. Bowden's my name. History.
Oh, how do you do?
I hear you were blessed with first prep. How did it go?
Well, I'm afraid I've got off to rather a bad start. I had to give young Collie 100 lines.
100 lines on the very first day? Yeah. That's a bit rough, isn't it?
Well, I thought it necessary.
Well, I suppose you know, and you'll have a long time here to correct any bad impressions. Good night, Chipping.
Good night. A long time to correct any bad impressions.
Billy!
Bester!
Oh,
Thomas! You've been here a long time, Chipping. Your work has been quite satisfactory. I know it won't come as a surprise to you after all this time that we're making you a house master. Good luck, Chipping.
I say, Chipping, going my well, ma'am?
I believe so.
Good. Well, another term ended, eh? Where are you going for the summer?
I hadn't thought, Bowden. Perhaps up to the Lake District.
Very nice. Oh, by the way, congratulations, Chipping.
Hmm?
You've been made a housemaster, haven't you?
Oh, yes. I've been waiting for it so long, I can hardly get excited about it now.
Oh, they don't come quickly. I was here 10 years before I got mine.
Do you know how long I've been here?
Well, now, let me see.
Almost 25.
25 years. It doesn't seem possible.
No, it doesn't. You know, when I first came, I had some fine dreams. I thought, what a wonderful thing it would be to be headmaster of a school like Brookfield. Well, youth is entitled to dreams.
Chipping, you've really done a fine job here. I can't understand why promotion has been so slow for you. I've often wondered...
Have you heard the news? What news? The new housemaster. Know who it is? Oh, Chip. Chip? No.
I stayed at my house.
Bad break for you, old man.
Chip, do you suppose I
could
move?
Were we looking for a reason?
Oh, I'm sorry, Chipping. Heartless little beggar.
No, it isn't their fault. I suppose I just don't understand them the way you chaps do.
Oh, nonsense. Well, here's where I turn off, old man. You'll write me from the lakes, eh?
Hmm? Oh, of course.
You going to do any mountain climbing?
Climbing? Yes, I expect so. I've always wanted to try old Stony.
Fine. Well, good luck, and be careful up there.
I will.
Here.
Yes, I know, but when I heard you call, I...
You were coming to me. Why?
Oh, well, for a moment, I thought...
That I was in trouble?
Yes.
I'm terribly sorry. I was calling to my friend down the mountain.
Oh. Oh, I see. Well...
It was very thoughtless of me, and very nice of you to come to my rescue, I mean. Was it your ankle you hurt?
Oh, no, it's nothing.
Try standing up.
No, I'm sure I can... manage.
Oh, no, no, you can't. Here, sit down. You can never get down the mountain like that. We'll just have to wait until my friend comes.
I'm putting you to a great deal of bother.
Oh, no, of course you're not. My name is Catherine Bridges.
How do you do? Mine is Chipping.
How do you do, Mr. Chipping? My
it
friend
really
and I are taking
quite,
a... I beg your pardon.
No, you were saying...
No, please. What was it, Mr. Chipping?
Well, I was about to say, it really is quite a wonderful day.
Yes, we've had fine weather all the week. My friend and I are on a bicycle tour of the whole Lake District. I've enjoyed every minute of it.
A bicycle tour?
Yes. Why?
Oh, nothing.
Don't you believe in ladies riding bicycles, Mr. Chipping?
Oh, it's a very helpful exercise, I imagine.
Hello there. Oh, Martha, come down. That's my friend, Mr. Chipping. What's the matter, Catherine? Oh, Martha, this is Mr. Chipping. Mr. Chipping, Miss Taylor.
How do you do?
How do you do?
Is he hurt? Yes, Martha. You see, he tried to rescue me and he slipped.
I see. And now we shall have to rescue him. Well, I imagine the two of us can carry him.
Oh, of course.
Oh, no, really.
Come along. Take his arm here, Catherine.
Already. Now, lean on me, Mr. Chipping.
Oh, but I feel so very silly.
Nonsense.
Lift him, Catherine.
And she has come to see me every day since the accident. I imagine you are surprised, Bowden, that I write so much of her. But she is really a very charming person. Yes, and I must admit, very beautiful, too. But please do not misunderstand me. She is far too charming and far too beautiful for me.
Catherine, what is the matter with you? You must realize we've overstayed our time as it is. We shall have to take the train back this morning. Now, are you coming with me or aren't you?
No, Martha, you know I can't leave yet. After all, he's still not entirely well, and well, it was my fault in a way, and... Well, I can't desert him.
Is that all, Catherine?
No.
Catherine, listen to me. He's a great deal older than you are. He's stuffy and slightly gray, and his opinions date from the 70s. He thinks Bernard Shaw is completely irresponsible, and he told me in confidence he's not at all sure women should have the vote. Have I said enough?
You said everything. Except that he's a thoroughly honest person, that his eyes are deep brown, and that he's very charming when he smiles. Oh, Martha, I've never met anyone like him before. And he's really very lonely. Did you know that?
He won't be much longer.
Martha.
Goodbye, my dear. Have a pleasant holiday. I'm off for lunch.
Oh, Martha, Martha, wait, wait. And they call you Chip.
But never to my face, of course.
I'm so glad you are what you are. I was afraid when I first met you that, well, that you were a lawyer or a dentist or a man with a big cotton business in Manchester. But schoolmastering is so different, so important, don't you think? To be influencing those who are to grow up and matter to the world. It's rather silly.
I hadn't thought of it like that. But I do my best. That's all anyone can do in any job.
Yes, of course. I love you for saying these simple things like that.
Catherine, I really must tell you something in all fairness.
Yes?
I'm not a very good schoolmaster. My degree is quite mediocre. I have a certain amount of difficulty with discipline. And I'm sure I'll never get another promotion, never get to be head or anything like that. In other words, what I'm trying to say is that I'm completely ineligible to marry a young and ambitious girl. Can you laugh at those
things? I am laughing.
Oh, Catherine, you make me very, very happy.
When shall we be married? Before the new term begins.
Oh, that would be quite wonderful. Shall we say, in a week?
Or tomorrow. Here, in Walsdale.
Tomorrow? Tomorrow? Of course, why not? I'll see a clergyman tonight.
Yes, you'd better. And I'll meet you in the morning at the inn.
Oh, Catherine.
We both have a great deal to do today.
Oh, yes. Letters and everything.
In the morning, then.
In the morning.
This is an occasion, you know, this last farewell of ours. I feel rather like a new boy beginning his first term with you. Not afraid, mind you, but just for once in a thoroughly respectful mood. Shall I call you sir? Or would Mr.
the chips be the right thing? Yes, I think it would. Until tomorrow, then. Goodbye, Mr. Chip.
One of Goodbye, Mr. Chips, and life seems to have taken on a new meaning for the quiet schoolmaster. Before we continue with Act Two, here's Mr. Ruick with a story from real life. Our producer, Mr. DeMille. Act Two of Goodbye, Mr. Chips, starring Laurence Olivier in the title role and Edna Best as Catherine. Fire in his comfortable room, old Mr. Chips dreams on. Dreams of a day long ago, a time of great and overwhelming happiness. For his marriage was a triumphant success, and Catherine conquered Brookfield as she'd already conquered one of its masters. But most remarkable of all was the change she made in Chips. He became, to all appearances, a new man.
Well, you've done it, Catherine. They're quite mad about you.
Oh, Chip, what are you talking about?
The head, the masters, the boys, everyone. They're all in love with you, just as I am.
Chip, you know, everyone's been so wonderful. I was horribly afraid for a while that I might not fit in. I wanted to so much.
You've been here 2 weeks, and you're more a part of Brookfield than I am.
Evening, Mr. Chip.
Oh, good evening.
Evening, sir.
Evening.
Good evening. Hello, boys. How did the match go today?
Oh, very well, thank you.
I'll have to come down and watch you tomorrow.
Thank you.
Good night, ma'am.
It's 4 o'clock tomorrow. I'll be there.
See what I mean? They'd never have spoken if you hadn't been with me.
Oh, Chips, must you be so formal with them?
Formal?
Well, relax a little, joke a little. You know, they'll like you ever so much better.
I've often wished I could.
Oh, you try to see. You've got a wonderful sense of humor, Chips.
I have?
Of course. Didn't you know?
I don't believe I ever said.
And now we come to the old Roman law known as Lex Canulaia. Lex Canulaia was the law which permitted patricians to marry plebeians. So you see, if Miss Plebs wanted Mr. Patrician to marry her, and he said he couldn't, she probably replied, oh, yes, you can, you liar. Question. What king was first to bear the title Defender of the Faith? Answer by Master Lytton in his most illegible script. The first king to bear the title Defender of the Faith was Henry VIII. He married 6 wives, but only one at a time.
You'll have to mark it right, Chip.
Well, the future of England's in good hands.
Mr. Chippen?
Yes?
Master Babcock is here.
Babcock?
Yes, Chips. I sent for him.
You sent? Well, tell him to wait, please.
Yes, sir.
Well, Catherine?
Chips, I thought it would be better if you spoke to Babcock here. I mean, instead of taking him to the head study as you planned.
Catherine?
Oh, please. After all, it wasn't anything very serious that he did.
My dear wife, if you think that releasing a mouse in the middle of Mr. Ogilvy's choir practice is not serious.
Oh, but such a small mouse.
What?
About so big, that's all. Oh, please, Chips, he won't do it again. I'll vouch for him.
You will.
Chips, have I ever been wrong?
No, my dear, you haven't. Well, I'll see what I can do.
Thank you, Chip.
Well, good evening, Babcock.
Good evening, sir.
Well, Babcock, that was quite an ingenious prank in choir practice today.
Yes, sir. I mean, no, sir.
Why did you do it?
Well, sir, I had the mouse there and...
You just thought you'd let him go, eh?
Well, it's against the rules to keep it, sir.
Yes, well, tell me, Babcock, can you think of any reason why I shouldn't take you to the head?
No, sir, except...
Except what?
It was a very small mouse, sir.
Oh, I see. Were you here earlier this afternoon?
Yes, sir.
I thought you were. Well, that's all, Babcock.
You mean I can go, sir?
Well, in view of the fact that the mouse was... get out, Babcock, get out, for goodness.
Yes, sir. Thank you very much, sir. Good night, sir.
Good night, good night.
Chip.
Yes?
You let him go, didn't you?
Yes. Because it was a small mouse. Heaven knows, Catherine, what kind of discipline I'll have from now on.
Oh, better, Chip. Much better. You wait and see.
Perhaps.
You know, you must be very kind and very understanding with the boys now. You never can tell. Your own son might let a mouse go at choir practice someday.
My son? Never.
Well, mine might.
He probably would. He'll be very much like you. He'll be honest and kind. And he'll make people happy wherever he goes.
Oh, Chip.
When he comes, we must be very careful to bring him up just right, mustn't we?
Very careful.
I have such wonderful plans. He'll go to Brookfield, of course.
Of course.
And he'll probably play cricket and soccer. Captain of cricket, I think, don't you?
Oh, yes.
Yes.
Unless, of course, he turns out to be a girl.
Oh, no, I never thought of that. Catherine, are you ever afraid?
Afraid, Chip?
That all the wonderful things that have happened aren't quite real.
I know what you mean.
I know they've never happened before, just like this. Sometimes I wonder if they ever really happened at all.
Too much like a fairy tale.
Yes. Always found it rather difficult to believe in fairy tales.
Oh, but you must believe. That's the wonderful thing about them, Chip. They're so true. And perhaps a long, long time from now, when we are quite forgotten, there'll be another story told of two people who wandered alone on a mountainside. And suddenly, they were not alone any longer, for the clouds opened below them. And there was the world at their feet. The whole wide world. All bright and shining in the sunlight.
Catherine, what have I done to deserve such happiness? Yes?
Oh, Doctor. Come at once, sir.
What is it?
It's Mrs. Chiffin, Doctor.
Mrs. Chiffin?
Yes, Doctor. Mr. Chiffin's very worried. He asked if you would please come right away.
Of course. I'll get my things.
I say, where's Chip? He's late for class this morning.
Oh, but when did he come? Eat of the lemons on his desk?
Eight of them.
You could.
What's up? A joke on Chips? Be careful. It's April Fool's.
You fool.
We've put a lot of lemons on Chips' desk. They're all addressed him. There's only blank paper and it's not. Don't be the word now.
Not I. Shh. Here he comes.
Oh, Mr. Chipping, sir, there are a lot of bits for you.
Stop it, Bags. I hear you. I can't help it. Stop it. He's helping. Be quiet, you fool.
There goes another one. Oh, good.
I say, look at his face. Look at his face.
And what do the letters say, sir? Please, sir, are they very important?
Doesn't he like the joke? What's the matter with him?
I don't know.
Do you suppose he's angry? He doesn't look angry.
Then why doesn't he say something? Why doesn't he laugh?
Catherine Chipping, the mother, and the child just born, died on the same day, April 1st, 1898.
Chipping, how the whole school feels. Just try to keep going, old man. Time will help you. Time and your work.
Thank you. Thank you.
That's the man.
That's the boy.
And over there's Big Hall.
It's nice of you to show me around.
Oh, we always show the new boys around. Oh, look. Isn't that old fellow over there in the torn gown? That's Chip. Been here since 1870, they say.
1870 to 1930?
That's right. 43 years now. You'll like Chip. Everybody does.
Oh, Mr. Chipping, sir.
Hey? Yes?
The head would like to see you in his office, sir.
Who?
The head, sir. Mr. Ralston.
Oh, Ralston. Thank you.
Come in, Mr. Chipping. Come in.
Boy said you wanted to see me.
Yes, sit down, will you?
Well, sir?
Mr. Chipping, how long have you been here?
43 years.
Yes, I thought it was about that. Have you ever thought that you might like to retire?
Retire? No, I can't say I have thought about it yet.
Well, Mr. Chipping, the suggestion is there for you to consider.
But I don't want to retire. I don't need to consider it.
Nevertheless, I suggest that you do.
And I suggest I don't see why I should.
Well, in that case, Mr. Chipping, things are going to be a little difficult.
Difficult? Why difficult?
Well, since you forced me to use plain words, Mr. Chipping, you shall have them. For some time past, you haven't been pulling your weight here. Your methods of teaching are slack and old-fashioned. Your personal habits are slovenly, and you ignore my instructions in a way which, in a younger man, I should regard as rank insubordination.
But did you say slovenly?
Yes. Now look at that master's gown you're wearing. I happen to know that that torn and shredded gown is a subject of continual amusement throughout the school.
Is it? You also said something about insubordination, I believe.
Yes. I was speaking of the question of Latin pronunciation, Mr. Chipping.
Oh, that.
I think I told you when I first came here that I wanted the new style used exclusively. The other masters obeyed me. You prefer to stick to your old methods, and the result is complete chaos and inefficiency.
Well, I don't agree with the new pronunciation.
Oh, really?
No, in my opinion, it's a lot of nonsense. Making the boys say Cicero at school when for the rest of their lives they'll say Cicero, if they ever say it at all. And instead of I sit him, heaven bless my soul, you'd make him say, we kiss him.
There you are, Mr. Chipping. That's exactly what I'm complaining of. You hold one opinion and I hold another. And since you declined to give way, there can't very well be any alternative.
What's that?
Mr. Chipping, Brookfield is an up-to-date school. I understand, however, that your Latin and Greek lessons are exactly the same as they were when I first began.
Yes, they are. For that matter, they're the same as when your predecessor, Mr. Meldrum, was here. We began here, Mr. Meldrum and I, in 1870, and it was Mr. Meldrum's predecessor, Mr. Weatherby, who first approved my syllabus. You'll take the Cicero for the fourth, he said to me. Cicero, too, not Cicero, and I don't intend to resign, Mr. Ralston, and you can do what you like about it. Good day.
Was Act Two of our play. I don't think Mr. Chips is going to be an easy man to fire. In the intermission before Act Three, here's a little presentation of a picture in sound.
Before Mr. DeMille brings us Act Three, he has as our guest the author of our play. We pause now for station identification. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System. Before the play continues, we have a special guest, James Hilton, who wrote Goodbye, Mr. Chips. For the last 4 years, he's been a regular resident of Hollywood and responsible for some of the finest writing done for motion pictures. His most recent assignment at Warner Brothers was the screenplay of his novel, We Are Not Alone. And so, without further explanation, I'll introduce one of Hollywood's most interesting people, James Hilton.
And you'll probably decide that he can't live up to such a very flattering introduction.
I should have added, ladies and gentlemen, that he's not fond of what Hollywood calls a build-up. I suppose, Mr. Hilton, the first question anyone asks about Mr. Chips is whether there was a real Mr. Chips.
As the author, I don't seem to be an authority on that point. I've had rather a large number of letters from people who assume that their own personal Mr. Chips was mine, too. Actually, I never knew any one schoolmaster who was the complete 100% Mr. Chips. He is a combination of many schoolmasters, including my father.
Is your father pleased or annoyed to find himself a fictional character?
Oh, he denies it altogether, which is exactly what Chips would do in the same circumstances.
I wonder what he thinks of motion pictures.
Well, I can only guess. My father saw a picture about 25 years ago, and the flickering hurt his eyes, so he didn't see another until I became involved in the business. Now he's extremely interested and very, very uncritical. He never says a picture is bad.
The perfect critic for a producer. But you said Chips was a composite character. Are there many like him?
There are fewer every year, and when they die, Chips will have disappeared forever from real life. You see, the English public schools, which are not really public at all, but private, have had to undergo many changes to fit the times.
Just as the schools in this country have had to adapt themselves to the shifting scene.
Of course, there was room for change. They had their faults. I've forgotten most of what I was taught in school, but I remember a few things I learned without being taught, such as blowing glass tubing into fancy shapes, or a slight aptitude for ventriloquism, which I developed to circumvent a master who was very deaf. These things have never been of much practical use to me since. But just the same, I know the whole experience was valuable. Any boy that comes under the influence of a Mr. Chips usually turns out to be a better citizen. That's why I'm sorry to see his type disappear, even though I know it's inevitable. And it's inevitable that the third act follows the second act, so I'll make my way for Mr. Chips now.
You couldn't make way for a better man, Mr. Hilton. We continue with Goodbye, Mr. Chips. The news that Ralston had asked Chips to resign was soon public property, and the result was a spontaneous outburst of sympathy. The masters and the boys rallied to Chips' cause, threatening a public riot if he was banished from Brookfield. And so, he stayed. But in the winter of 1913... the old man fell ill and was off duty for almost the entire term. It was that which made him decide to resign. At the end of term dinner, given in Chip's honor, he received a farewell presentation from the boys.
And so, sir, the boys of Brookfield have asked me to make this presentation of this gift. It's from the boys of Brookfield to show our esteem and in recognition of the great service you performed for Brookfield.
Thank you. I'm afraid young Mr. Collier has been guilty of an exaggeration in speaking of my services to Brookfield. But then, of course, he comes from an exaggerating family. I remember once having to thrash his father for it. I gave him a one mark for Latin, and he exaggerated it into a seven. I have been at Brookfield for almost 44 years, and I have been very happy here. It has been my life. Oh, my high preteritos referat sci Jupiter ados. I need not, of course, translate. I remember very many things about Brookfield, so many things that I've often thought I ought to write a book. Now, what shall I call it, I wonder? Memories of Rod and Line. Perhaps I shall write it someday. But of all the things I remember, the things I remember best are your faces. I never forget them. I have thousands of faces in my mind. The faces of boys. And if you come to see me in the years to come, as I hope you will, and if I don't seem to recognize you, you'll probably say to yourself, the old boy doesn't remember me. But I do remember you, as you are now. That's the point. In my mind, you never grow up at all. Never. Well, I mustn't go on all night. I shall be living just across the road at Mrs. Wickett's. Think of me sometime, as I shall certainly think of you. Heck, Olim Meminisi. You babe it. Again, I need not translate. Impossible, Lancaster. We ought to have it finished by Christmas at the very latest. But why are you thinking of joining up, Lancaster?
Lancaster's a little short for a soldier, sir. Don't you think?
Oh, only by a foot or two, eh, Lancaster? Boys of Brookfield who have given their lives for their country. Brill, Evans, Jackson, Lancaster.
Do you think it will last long, sir?
Lancaster. More boys. More and more and more. Going up to the front. Boys I've known.
Chips, old man. Come sit down.
Yes, Sir John.
Chips, as chairman of the board, the governors have asked me to have a talk with you.
Yes, Sir John.
It's about the matter of our masters joining up. Suppose you know the head's gone.
I heard, yes.
Leaves us very short-handed.
Yes.
Well, briefly, Chips, the board wants to know if you feel well enough to come back.
How can they tie us?
Mm-hmm. They want to know, Chips, if you'll do us the very great honor of coming back for the duration of the war as headmaster of Brookfield School.
Headmaster? Of Brookfield?
Yes, you're the man for it, the only man.
You belong here.
Oh, but it's such a great responsibility. I'm a ranker, Sir John. I'm not meant
to be
a
head. Think it over.
Oh, yes, I will, but I really don't.
Please, don't answer me now. Come back and see me in the morning.
Very well, very well.
Good night, sir.
Good night, Sir John. Good night.
Soon?
John,
I've made my decision.
I think I know what it is.
I'll do my best, Sir John, because that's all anyone can do in any job. The class will continue. It may seem to you that at this particular moment in the world's history that the affairs of Caesar in Gaul some 2,000 years ago are of somewhat secondary importance. But believe me, that is not really the case. You cannot judge the importance of things by the noise they make. Oh, dear me. Resume our work. Is there anyone who will volunteer to construe?
I will, sir.
Very good. Turn to page 40 and begin at the bottom line.
Yes, sir. Genus hoc erat pugni. This was the kind of fight quo si milites exercuerant, in which the soldiers busied themselves.
Oh, sir, that's
good.
Yes, you can see now that these dead languages sometimes come to life again, eh? Good afternoon, Doctor. What brings you here? Not I, certainly.
No. The head asked me to look in. He wanted to know if you were going to the old boys' dinner in London this year.
Oh.
I told him I didn't think you were.
No, I'm afraid not. It's been a long time since I left here. Not since the war.
Chipping, do you really think you should be up?
Oh.
There's a lot of flu about you,
no? There's nothing matter with me, Doctor. Nothing at all. And what would I do in bed? Why, one of the boys might drop in. A fine reception.
Well, I leave it up to you. Goodbye, Chipping.
Goodbye. And if you see a chap in the quad who looks as if he just couldn't wait till dinner, send him along, will you? I've a cake.
I will.
I remember them all. 63 years ago, didn't it? And I can still hear their names as they call them before the classes. Ainsworth, Atwood, Abelmore, Babcock. Father. Bassenthwaite.
Mr. Tipster, are you asleep, sir? Shall I go now, sir? Mr. Tip!
Well, Doctor, what do you think? I don't know, Sir John. He's a very old man.
Who's that?
Hello there. Waking up?
What happened?
Nothing much. You sure faint, that's all.
Oh.
It's lucky that boy was with you. Try to sleep again.
Yes.
Poor old chap. That's a very lonely sort of life. Oh, Banster. Not always by himself. He was married, you know.
What?
I never knew that. She died a great many years ago.
Pity he never had any children. Oh, what was that?
Careful.
What were you saying about me?
Nothing. Nothing at all, old chap.
I heard you. A pity I never had any children, eh? But I have, you know.
I have thousands of them. And all boys.
Before our stars return for their curtain call, I want to present Miss Libby Collins, who ferrets out news behind the scenes here in Hollywood. What have you for us tonight, Libby?
Two or three fascinating things about the stalking habits of some of the Hollywood stars. For example, do you know that Kitty Carlisle rinses her stockings in perfume instead of water?
Well, she walks in beauty. What else, Libby?
Well, Jane Wyman uses adhesive tape instead of garters to hold up her stockings. A cute idea is to cut the tape into little designs, like hearts or clubs or your zodiac sign. And here's one item that's a little closer to home. Willie's of Hollywood, who designs most of the gorgeous stockings we see in motion pictures, says the average woman should have 20 pairs of stockings. If she gives them the right kind of care, they should last a year.
And now Mr. DeMille is bringing our stars to the microphone.
Mr. Chips has retired to immortality. We bring Laurence Olivier and Edna Best back to our microphone.
You know, Mr. DeMille, this play brought back a few memories of my own school days.
Were you the small boy who released the mouse? The very small mouse at choir practice?
No. The most pronounced mischief I created at school was acting in play.
We're glad you didn't perform.
As a matter of fact, I went from bad to worse, turned professional, and joined a repertory company.
Playing four or five different parts a week, I suppose.
If you get a passing mark in that school, you're an actor.
Yes, anything can happen in one of those theaters. I remember one incident with a traveling company when the juvenile was taken ill. The manager wired to another company in the next county to borrow an actor. When a borrowed juvenile arrived 10 minutes before curtain time, he turned out to be a character man about 70 years old. The manager was frantic. There he was 10 minutes before the curtain time with a character man to play a juvenile role. Only the visiting actor remained calm. He inquired for his dressing room. 5 minutes later, he reappeared with his makeup on.
Now, my good man, he said to the manager, where is the stage and what is the play?
I know just the kind of actor you mean. Give him the right cue and he'll play Peter Pan or the second gravedigger in Hamlet.
But I imagine he'd be pretty startled if anyone told him that there was a theater with an audience as big as this one. What's your play next week, Mr. DeMille?
Next Monday night, we're going to present a play by George Bernard Shaw, the one which was so very successful on the screen this year, Pygmalion. And our stars will be Jean Arthur and Brian Ahern. Pygmalion is the story of an unromantic gentleman of learning who trains a cockney girl to impersonate a duchess, an experiment which produces startling and romantic results.
That sounds like a grand show. Jean Arthur and Brian Ahern in Pygmalion. I'm anxious to hear it. Good night.
Good night, Mr. DeMille.
Goodbye, Mr. and Mrs. Chip. Join me in inviting you to be with us again next Monday night when the Lux Radio Theater presents Jean Arthur and Brian Ahern in Pygmalion. This is Cecil B. DeMille saying good night to you from Hollywood.
This is Mel Dilroy, inviting you to enjoy the popular Lux daytime program, The Life and Love of Dr. Susan. Susan's enemies are plotting to set the whole town against her. Tomorrow, they reveal their scheme. Listen then. For the time and station, see your newspaper. The Life and Love of Dr. Susan comes to you in addition to the Lux Radio Theater. Heard in tonight's play were Alan Napier as Weatherby, Clifford Severn as Linford, Ronald Sinclair as Collie, Frederick Warlock as Ralston, Lillian Kemble Cooper as Martha, Mary Gordon as Mrs. Wickett, C. Montague Shaw as a doctor, Eric Snowden as Bowden, Ian McLaren as Meldrum, and Douglas Scott, Bobby Winkler, Harry Duff, Bobby Mock, Brian Killaway, Tommy Martin, Ernest Carlson, Cliff Olin, Bill Martin, Bob Stevens, Edwin Mills, and Richard Kukas as schoolboys. Laurence Olivier's forthcoming picture is Rebecca, produced by David O. Selznick. Edna Best will soon be seen in the RKO picture Swiss Family Robinson, produced by Gene Towne and Graham Baker. Our music was directed by Louis Silvers. This is the Columbia Broadcasting System.
Saturday, January 18th at 7 p.m., the Henry Ford College Music Department will proudly present the second installment of their annual Henry Ford Big Band Concert Series, this time featuring Detroit-based jazz bassist Trevor Lamb. A member of multiple local projects, including the Eat It Up Trio, several regular jam sessions around town, and the Trevor Lamb Trio, Trevor Lamb joins the Henry Ford College Big Band for one night only, from the Adrey Auditorium inside the McKenzie Fine Arts Center on the campus of Henry Ford College, located at 5101 Evergreen Road in Dearborn, Michigan, at 7 p.m. on Saturday, January 18th. Can't make it in person? WHFR will broadcast the concert live right here on these airwaves. That's Trevor Lamb and the Henry Ford Big Band, live from the Adrey Auditorium on the campus of Henry Ford College, or broadcast live at 89.3 FM in the Dearborn area and online at www.whfr.fm, Saturday, January 18th at 7 p.m.
The many sounds, the many faces of jazz and improvised music can be heard on the Spirits Rejoice radio program every Tuesday from 6 to 10 p.m. right here, WHFR.fm, WHFR Dearborn.
And that's going to pretty much wrap it for today's Radio Vault. We thank you for hanging around. We're going to make way for a return of Classical 24 in just a moment here. And why is that stopped? Oh, the mysteries of live radio. Anyway, as I was saying, That wraps it for today, and we'll do it again in another week. If you like the mysteries, you check us out Sunday night between 9 and midnight, all right? All righty. Stay warm, and we'll talk to you soon. Have a good one.
Broadcasting from the campus of Henry Ford College, this is WHFR Dearborn, listener-supported, non-commercial radio. Thank you for being here. You know, classes are always starting at some point here at HFC. We are enrolling now for the winter 2025 semester, so please do check it out, hfcc.edu. Also, we are so proud to partner with our friends at the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra and present their big performances as well as other things that they do throughout their season, things like the e-newsletter, concert posters, there's video previews, media releases, and more. You can find all of this information on the Dearborn Symphony website. It's as simple as going to dearbornsymphony.org. That's dearbornsymphony.org. Or at any point, if you'd like to call for ticket information and more, 313-565-2424. 313-565-2424.
Here's Yehudi Menuhin leading the Menuhin Festival Orchestra in the Symphony No. 2 by William Boyce.